with Iran at this point in history are now so multiple and so madly opposed to each other, despite all emanating from the same source, i.e. the White House, that it is almost, well, not perhaps even almost, but it is very, very close to impossible to make sense of why he has done what he's done. And of course, if you're a saber rattler, if you are an Iraq amnesiac, if you are a client journalist for whatever Rupert Murdoch wants to happen in the Middle East next, then you don't worry about the fact that you've got no idea what's going on. You're just certain that you're in favour of it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, LBC has been told the first UK government-chartered plane out of the Middle East will leave later today. It was due to depart the Omani capital, Muscat, last night. It's understood it didn't take off due to operational reasons getting people on the plane. Border Security Minister Alex Norris has told Nick Ferrari, "It's unfortunate, but officials are working to strict deadlines."
Theirs is a tightly regimented and regular schedule of flights in and out of airports.
And we try and do one on a government basis and it doesn't take
Nick,
off.
And Nick, and you know as well as me, as I suspect, you know, you're a frequent flyer.
I am.
It doesn't always work. Like, in this case, this was a flight stood up in short order. Those people will go. We're supporting them on the ground in the meantime. Mm.
Ministers have pushed back on suggestions the UK's been too slow in deploying defensive assets to the Iran conflict. The Defence Secretary John Healey is visiting Cyprus today, following claims not enough's being done to protect the island. Cyprus was granted independence in 1960, but Britain was given sovereignty over two RAF bases there in return for security guarantees. LBC's deputy political editor Aggie Chambray is with Mr. Healey on the trip and has more details.
I am here with the Defence Secretary. I'm in Nicosia, and the Defence Secretary, John Healey, is here after that drone hit RAF base Akrotiri in Cyprus, and two more drones were intercepted. He's also here in a bid to calm tensions after there's anger from some local ministers about the UK not doing more to protect its bases on the island.
Explosions have been reported across the Middle East overnight as the conflict enters a sixth day. Israel says its air defences have intercepted fresh strikes from Iran. In other news, three men, including the husband of a Scottish Labour MP who were arrested on suspicion of spying for China, have been released on bail. David Taylor, who's married to Joni Reid, was one of those arrested at addresses in London and Wales yesterday. Miss Reid says she's never seen anything to make her suspect her husband has broken any law. And LBC can exclusively reveal that failed asylum seekers will be offered up to £40,000 to leave the UK within 7 days. 150 families are expected to take part in the trial, which could eventually save £20 million. There's more on the LBC app. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 26 at 10,549. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry, sunny and very mild for England and Wales. Outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone. Even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. What are the words that you least want to hear at this moment attached to warnings or negative stories? What are the two words you would least... If I said to you, I've been reading up on what the beep beeps have to say, what would be the two words that struck the most terror into your heart? I don't know. Maybe you, actually, should we hold off for a while on revealing what it actually is to see what suggestions you come up with on 84850 for your text, or 0345 6060 973 for the WhatsApp. So I'm reading up. I'm trying to read around a lot at the moment because, you know, what is the point of doing this job if you don't do your very best to understand everything that's going on? But it's a thankless task. Well, it's not a thankless task because it gives you a better ability to explain or understand what is actually going on, but it's a dispiriting task. The more you read, the weirder it gets. Okay, I mean, I'm almost nostalgic for the days when exaggerated claims about the existence of weapons of mass destruction were the only and undisputed rationale for war. I don't mean that the claims were undisputed, perish the thought. I simply mean that the existence of those claims as the rationale for war was undisputed. Why are we going to war in Iraq? Well, they are led by a terrible man. Yeah, but loads of places are led by terrible men. Yeah, but they don't pose a threat to us. Does he? Really? Saddam Hussein? Yeah, absolutely. Seriously, man. Weapons of mass destruction. Seriously, that dossiers, all sorts. So that was the undisputed rationale, albeit one that turned out to be false, for going to war in Iraq. I cannot believe I am nostalgic for the days when we were simply misled. Sometimes I come on air at 3 minutes after 10 in the morning? I hit 5 past and I think, why didn't I realise that before I got on the radio? I am nostalgic for the days when we were simply misled. Because the thing about a claim about weapons of mass destruction is that it can be proved or disproved subsequently. Ideally, it can be proved or disproved before you actually launch a war in the Middle East that will have ramifications and impacts generations after you've gone back home again. Some, of course, of us in, or not us, some of them, some of our troops and our allies in body bags with untold casualties and deaths among civilians and soldiers of our latest enemy. But if it is a binary claim about the existence of something, it can be proved or disproved eventually, either quickly or slowly or somewhere in between. If you've got half a dozen and counting conflicting claims about why a war is being undertaken. Oh, it's happening again. I'm sorry I didn't work this out sooner. Then you can never be accused of failing or succeeding. Why has Donald Trump gone to war in Iran? Oh, it's to get rid of the regime. No, it isn't. The most likely successor to Ayatollah Khomeini at the moment is, wait for it, Ayatollah Khomeini, his son. He's currently the most likely successor. The other people that were in line for the job, Donald Trump has conceded, have been killed, presumably accidentally. I don't think you deliberately kill the candidates for replacing the bloke that you're trying to kill. That must have been an accident. They must have accidentally killed the people that they had earmarked for doing it. So it wasn't that. There is no threat to the United States of America. That has been established beyond reasonable doubt, but that doesn't stop members of Donald Trump's administration claiming that that's why they've done it. Do you know what Pete Hegseth said yesterday? I just want you to know, all right, I am not going to insert any red herrings into this morning's analysis. Everything I'm telling you has actually happened. I'm not going to get to 10:15 or 10:20 and say to you, oh, by the way, one of those claims was false. One of those claims was me yanking your collective chain. All of the things I'm telling you this morning are true. So the first one you've got is, oh yes, we want regime change. But the bloke most likely to take over is the son of the bloke that we got rid of. Oh, and by the way, we accidentally killed the candidates that we thought might be able to deliver the sort of regime that we could do a little bit more business with. The US Secretary of War yesterday suggested that the reason for this attack was because Donald Trump had a feeling that Iran was going to kill her. I've got them mixed up. No, he said that they did it to get the man behind a plot to murder Donald Trump, and then they provided absolutely no evidence or identity of the man who was secretly plotting to murder Donald Trump. He definitely exists, but he goes to a different school. And then you've got Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, offering you another reason why Donald Trump has gone to war in Iran.
President Trump does not make these decisions in a vacuum. This decision to launch this operation was based on a cumulative effect of various direct threats that Iran posed to the United States of America. And the president's feeling based on fact that Iran does pose an imminent and direct threat to the United States of America, based on the fact that they are the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, based on the fact that they were rapidly and aggressively building up their ballistic missile program to give themselves immunity within their country alongside their navy, so that inside their country they could continue to create nuclear weapons and nuclear bombs, which would of course pose a risk to Americans in the region and even Americans one day here at home. And then another point on this is the president found that through these extensive, exhaustive, failed negotiations with Iran, that they were hell-bent on death and destruction. So again, the president was not going
So Donald Trump had a feeling, about nuclear capability that everybody knows doesn't exist, that Benjamin Netanyahu has been claiming was mere days away since 1996. So is anyone keeping score? Is anyone going to keep tabs on this stuff? What have we got so far? Regime change, but not regime change. Get rid of the Ayatollah, but replace him with his son. Find some suitable candidates. Oops, we can't use them because we've accidentally killed them. There was a bloke who was trying to murder Donald Trump. We had to go in and take him out. Who was he? Can't tell you that, but he definitely exists. He just goes to a different school. Is that three, four, five? How many theories is that now? Then you've got the press secretary talking absolute gibberish, bilge, lies. Measurable, demonstrable dishonesty, claiming that it was all based on a feeling that Donald Trump had about bombs that don't exist. And you want to make the claims about terrorism? Look me in the eye and tell me that an unstable regime is going to be a less effective sponsor of terrorism than a stable regime. Or, indeed, that if terrorists are minded to do harm to the West, bombing the East is going to minimise that likelihood rather than maximise it. Then you got Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. Are you ready for another theory? Are you ready for another And they're all coming from the same building. This cannot be exaggerated, the importance of this simple fact. They are all coming from the same building. So you think about the weapons of mass destruction, and you know that one day you'll know whether it was true or not. Why are they doing this war? You will never know. And that, I'm afraid, is the point. Here is Marco Rubio trying to unsay something that he said on tape the previous day.
Yesterday, you told us that Israel was going to strike Iran, and that's why we needed to get involved. Today, the president said that Iran was going to get
involved. Yeah, your statement is false, so that's not what he... I was asked very specifically. Were you there yesterday?
Yes, I asked
a question. No, were you the one that... Because somebody asked me a question yesterday. Did we go in because of Israel? And I said, you asked me that, you from that follow-up. And I said, no. I told you this had to happen anyway. The president made a decision, and the decision he made was that Iran was not going to be allowed to hide behind its ballistic missile program, that Iran was not going to be allowed to hide behind its ability to conduct these attacks. That decision had been made. The president systematically made a decision to systematically destroy this terroristic capability that they had, and we carried that out. I was very clear in that answer. This was a question of timing, of why this had to happen as a joint operation.
But he's trying to unsay what he'd said the previous day. And, of course, the capabilities that they speak of, they were boasting about having destroyed 9 months previously. So either they've gone from 0 to 60 in the 9 months since they destroyed the capability last June, or they were lying about destroying the capability last June, or they're lying now about the capabilities that still exist, or they're just always lying. Or they're just always, always lying. So how many's that? It's about regime change, but it's not, because it's probably going to be the son that gets installed. It's about replacing the Ayatollah with people that we like, but we've accidentally killed them all. It's because Israel were going to go ahead, and we realised that Iran would retaliate against us if Israel attacked them, and so we thought we'd better attack Iran before they were the victims of an unprovoked attack from Israel. Is it because Donald Trump had a feeling based on facts? But I can't really explain how you have a feeling based on facts. You either have a feeling or you have facts. They are two conflicting and contradictory things until the evidence is provided. That, I've got that as five. How many have you got now? You've got the claim that one of them, an unidentified member of the regime, wanted to kill Donald Trump somehow. So they had to get in there and kill him first, but they can't tell you who he is. He definitely exists. He just goes to a different madrasa. That's six, and I've barely even drawn breath yet. It's only 13 minutes after 10. Have we got more? Then you've got the theories that other people put into the space available, that it's all about money, that it's all about oil, that it's all about this, that it's all about midterms. Another report among the selection of headlines that should chill anybody currently minded to think that this is either normal or positive or good or something that should be cheered. Here's another headline for you. Netanyahu manoeuvres for poll boost from battle. And this is in the Times newspaper. After leading Israel through multiple wars in 2.5 years, Benjamin Netanyahu is no longer afraid of challenging the status quo. Yeah, that's what challenging the status quo looks like. And the suggestion is that he will call elections sooner rather than later because the Israeli electorate love a little bit of war. The one that really frightens me, and the two words that I was teasing you with at the beginning of the programme, what two words would frighten you most? I don't know if anybody's played that game, actually. My inbox tends to go a little bit bonkers at times like this, so it's hard to keep track of things that you sent in 5 or 10 minutes ago. But if I said to you, beep, beep, two words, have warned that, or I have been finding out what beep, beep, two words think about this, what would be the two words that worried you the most if their conclusion was that things are potentially going to end up much worse than they were before this started? All right, spoiler alert, nuclear experts. I know we live in an era where people like Nadine Dorries think they understand things better than all of the experts, but I'm still going to go with the nuclear experts at times like this. And nuclear experts are warning that the US-Israeli onslaught against Iran runs the risk of backfiring and driving the regime towards making a secret bomb, a bomb that it doesn't currently have, but which has been offered up as the rationale for attacking them by countries that are currently attacking them. And there are, remember, only two countries currently attacking them. There is no coalition here like we saw in Iraq. So that's 7, 8, 9. How many have you got? How many reasons why Donald Trump has gone to war in Iran have you currently got? And the bit that I missed is that that is the point. It's always the point. The thing that confuses you most is always the point. The cruelty is the point. The confusion is the point. The corruption is the point. The things that normal people still somehow stapled to the status quo or still somehow concerned about international law or a rules-based order or a world in which there are consequences for criminal or immoral actions. Those of us who still value those kind of things, who don't think that a rationale for breaking international law is the fact that the people you're murdering broke international law, because that means no laws matter. The thing that I always miss, and I don't understand why we always miss it, is that that is the point. The cruelty is the point. The corruption is the point. And today, this week, the confusion is the point. Because if you don't know why they've gone to war, how can you ever conclude completely and categorically that it has failed? Or, of course, succeeded. You can claim that it succeeded, but if there's no consensus on what was supposed to be achieved, you can't really dismantle that claim. So when, as he will, write this down, Donald Trump claims a glorious victory, a magnificent victory, we have already been deprived of the tools we will need to work out whether or not he's telling the truth or lying again. Spoiler alert, he'll be lying. But we won't be able to prove it because we haven't got in front of us a consensus on why this war is taking place. Wow. I've said to you a few times this week that I don't know what I'm going to say till I get on the radio, but it's my job to read as much as I can, to talk to people, which I don't really like doing when I'm not on the radio, and to canvas views, insights, expertise. And sometimes I hit the junction and I think, oh my days, it's even worse than I thought. So you've got no idea why he's undertaking this war, which means you can't support it. You can write all the Daily Telegraph op-eds you want or thump your desk in a TV studio until you're bruised. But you can't support it if you don't know why it's happening. To which, of course, you can shout, doff cap, tug, forelock, whatever you want, Mr. Murdoch, sir. Yes, I bloody can support it. I'm Kemi Badenoch. I can support a war that I don't understand because I don't understand anything. So if I have to only support things that I understand, I can't support anything. If you don't understand why it's happening, how on earth can you support it? Oh, they're being punished for murdering Iranian civilians. Right, how are we punishing them? By murdering Iranian civilians. Right. That's number 9, 10, 11. Rationales for war. How many have you got now? Are you in double figures? So when he claims, as he will, that there has been a glorious victory, as Benjamin Netanyahu claimed last June, less than a year ago, that there had been generational success, which would, for any person, even vaguely sensible, lead to the conclusion that that means they won't need to go into Iran again for a generation or three, when they claim epic and magnificent success, you won't be able to say, well, you will and I will, because we're paying attention. But the cap doffers, the forelock tuggers, the people who love the racism, the misogynists, the climate change deniers, the anti-vax brigade, the Daily Telegraph op-eds, the Daily Mail editors, they'll all be able to pretend that he's right. Just like they pretend that he's not a felon, or they pretend that he won an election that he lost, or they pretend that he didn't incite an insurrection, or they pretend that he didn't sue a woman who accused him of rape for libel and lose, or they pretend that it was just locker room talk when he boasted about sexually assaulting women. They will be able, he gives them just enough space to pretend that black is white, that freedom is slavery, that ignorance is strength. He gives them just enough room to pretend that the fake news is the news, that the facts are alternative facts, that the lies are the truth. And it's 20 past 10. I'm quite keen to go home now, because I don't know that we're going to add anything to our understanding of the situation, to what we've just worked out together. And it is together. It is together, even though you haven't been able to get a word in edgeways yet. I read what you send me. I look at what you're thinking. I knit together the expertise that is being reported alongside sometimes the propaganda. And I know for a fact that I'm right. The reason why they haven't told us why they've gone to war is because that way they won't be able to be judged ever on success or failure. The other perfectly reasonable possibility is that they don't really know. Donald Trump probably doesn't even know. None of the people around him know. They just don't really know. Donald Trump, we've gone to war because Donald Trump wanted to go to war. Or because they couldn't tell Benjamin Netanyahu not to go to war. We can probably work out why Benjamin Netanyahu wants to go to war, keeps him out of jail, possibly keeps him in power. Why does Donald Trump want to go to war? Marco Rubio has two answers to that question. The first answer is, because they couldn't stop Benjamin Netanyahu from going to war. And the second answer is, it's not because we couldn't stop Benjamin Netanyahu going to war. So you think I'm exaggerating? That's just the truth. The Secretary of State says, we're going to war because we couldn't stop Benjamin Netanyahu going to war, and we had to get our retaliation in first before they attacked us in response to the war that we couldn't stop starting. And then the very next day he says, oh no, that's definitely not the reason. The Secretary of State for War comes forward and says, oh, it's because someone wanted to kill Donald Trump. We don't know who, but we had to kill them first. Press Secretary comes forward and says, oh, Donald Trump had a feeling. He had a feeling that they were going to attack us with weapons that don't exist, so we've gone to attack them. 03456060973. 22 minutes after 10. Pick your favourite. Or add another one to the mix. Because you're never going to know. And that is the point. How on earth can anybody ever be judged on whether a mission has succeeded or failed if you have no idea what the mission was supposed to achieve? 03456060973. Why do you think Donald Trump has gone to war in Iran? Because it ain't for any of the reasons we've been given.
LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance?
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
24 minutes after 10, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And not for the first time. One of the things that amazes me most is the blatant transparency of the contempt in which he holds his supporters. Because you can see it in the UK media, never mind the US media. They take the first thing they're given, the reason why we're going to war in Iran, and they shout it from the rooftops, and they call everybody else quislings or cowards or peaceniks or pacifists or traitors. And then they actually disown the rationale that they gave. So here you are, you climb up a big ladder. If you're Alistair Heath in the Daily Telegraph or Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail, you climb up a big ladder and you bellow from the top of it, we have to go to war in Iran because... And then they list whatever it is that Marco Rubio said yesterday, or Pete Hegseth said yesterday, or Donald Trump said yesterday, or Caroline Leavitt said yesterday. And then the very next day, they say the opposite. Or they say something that completely contradicts what you staked your so-called reputation on just 24 hours ago. So you're stuck at the top of a ladder shouting about regime change, or human rights, or nuclear threat. And every single one of them turns out to be untrue, either through evidence or through the fact that the latest reason they've given for doing what they're doing directly contradicts the reason they gave yesterday. And instead, and this is the great mystery of the political and commentating classes, instead of just saying, oh boy, we all make mistakes, I can't believe I've just made one this big again, they pretend it never happened, they double down, and in most cases, they'll start shouting the completely contradictory rationale that's been offered up 24 hours later after the last one they were adamant provide a justification for a war. I mean, come on. Rewind this. Listen to it again. Compare it to what anybody else is telling you and show me the flaws in the thinking. Nobody knows why this is happening, and every reason they give falls apart, usually within 24 hours. Max is in Abu Dhabi. Max, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mistake to think that it isn't rational, coherent, and strategic. And I think, that's the mistake that much of the anti-Trump narrative has struggled with for years as he's kind of had his personal successes. In terms of the reasons, I mean, the number one overarching reason, it removes the constant existential threat that exists to Israel. You know, it's a major ally.
Putting the sun in charge.
Well, no. So I don't think that's the end game that they would consider.
What's the end game, and why won't they tell us?
I think they've actually numerous times given hints and almost directly said the end game. I think the end game for them is regime change, but it's without.
They've categorically said that it isn't. They said that they would welcome boots on the ground, but not American troops.
No, what I'm saying is I don't think it's the Americans' end game to have boots on the ground. I think it's the opposite. They definitely don't want boots on the ground.
So what is the end game?
I think it's regime change.
But they've said it isn't regime change.
But they've also said at the same time, whether it be Hezbollah...
So you're just picking your favourite then?
No, wait. They've said numerous times that they want the Iranian people to rise up and take control of the country themselves.
Yeah, well, no, they've said they'd help the Iranian people take control of the country themselves. And they've also said that they wanted regime change. And they've also said that they didn't want regime change. And they've also said they had candidates in the current administration that they favoured to take over, but they accidentally killed them. And they've also said that they could probably do business with the last Ayatollah's son. So I'm just intrigued by, and I don't want this to sound rude, Max, but where do you derive your confidence from? Because everybody else can see 10 options that are all contradictory, and you sound quite confident that the one you prefer is the right one.
Okay, number one, I think that's the difference between their communication strategy and their actual military and international strategy.
So you're not party to either of those, are you?
None of us are, so we can...
Well that's my point, not yours. That's my point, not yours. You're not party to the communication strategy. Well, tell me what it is then.
We are. The communication strategy is very Trumpian, and it's to put in multiple conflicting messages to confuse people as much as possible.
So how come you're not confused?
Well, because I think, okay, back to the question that you gave me a second ago, why am I confident? Number one, I think that when you look at the regional support for the past 2 years, whether it be from the tacit approval for what was happening in Gaza and the destruction of Hamas, Hezbollah...
Sorry, who's tacit actions, approval of the genocide?
I think most of the Gulf nations who sat there and watched it happen.
Why are Jordan flying aid flights over Gaza and desperately trying to get the carnage to stop? You're suggesting most of the Gulf states are supporting the genocide.
I think most of the Gulf states are supporting...
Yellow card,
James,
isn't it?
James,
what could they have done to stop it? What could they have done to stop it, Matt?
I think they've been supportive of the destruction of Hamas and Hezbollah and Assad in Syria, and all Iranian influence, which was destabilizing all of their countries.
What could they have done to stop the genocide?
They could have probably lobbied the Americans a lot more.
but yeah, you just described the Americans as being essential architects of chaos.
Because, no, communication chaos. But in terms of the strategy in the Middle East, I think the destruction of Hamas, the destruction of Hezbollah, the pushing out...
They haven't destroyed Hamas, and they haven't destroyed Hezbollah.
I didn't say they have, I said the destruction. So anything that works towards destruction.
Oh, okay. And but they haven't.
But they've degraded...
And they have committed genocide, and you think that the Gulf states are supportive of that?
I think the...
So the things I mention have happened, and the things you mention haven't happened, and yet here you are with your confidence.
No, James. That Hamas have been severely degraded, by 95% capability, probably. Hezbollah too. Assad kicked out of Syria. The nuclear capability in Iran bombed last year.
Look, is it looking safer to you, the Middle East?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Within, well,
safer
within
than it was
days,
last week?
Within 7 days.
Safer than it was last
superiority.
Week?
Yeah.
Would the people of Gaza agree, do you think? Would the people of Gaza agree?
No, absolutely not.
People in Dubai, I mean, when was the last time they saw missiles flying towards their buildings?
Well, I'm sitting there right now.
Well,
and tell me then. The biggest problem for
but
people...
Safer than you were last week?
Mozzarella.
Safer than you were last week, when there were no missiles flying towards your buildings?
Look, I think in 6 months' time, this region will be much safer, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
Because they told us when they went into Gaza that in 6 months' time the region would be much safer.
Yeah, okay, but I'll throw this back to you then. Do you genuinely think that the past 2 years of actions across Hamas, Hezbollah, Syria, Iran, do you think that it hasn't been done without the awareness and approval and the arming and stocking of all of the nations
absolutely.
Within this region?
I absolutely believe that many of the regimes in the Middle East are utterly disgusted by what has happened because they understand the generational threat to their stability that will be posed by the radicalization of countless generations of Palestinian people by the genocide that's been inflicted upon them.
Do you think that Saudi Arabia...
I've answered your question. You're not really answering mine.
Turkey and Egypt
You're not really answering mine. Why have you picked... Of all the 10 options that are given for why Donald Trump has gone to war in Iran, why have you picked this one?
Because I think it suits the overall long-term strategic agendas of the Gulf nations out to Egypt and Turkey and to the USA.
Wow. And Donald Trump is the rational, honest... upstanding, decent leader that is going to deliver this. Is going to deliver this gold-rimmed
dream. I probably agree
dream.
With one of those words. I think he's rational, but not honest and not decent.
Yeah, but hey, let's go to war with him, eh? 10:32 is the time. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
The first UK government chartered plane out of the Middle East will leave later today. It was due to depart from Oman last night, but didn't take off due to technical problems. Ministers have pushed back on suggestions the UK has been too slow in deploying defensive assets to the region. Defence Secretary John Healey is visiting Cyprus, following claims not enough is being done to protect RAF bases on the island. Three men who were arrested on suspicion of spying for China have been released on bail. David Taylor, who's married to Scottish Labour MP Joni Reid, was one of them. LBC can exclusively reveal that failed asylum seekers will be offered up to £40,000 to leave the UK within 7 days. 150 families are expected to take part in the trial, which could save £20 million a year. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most of England and Wales. Outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus binding and blocking drafts, said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance?
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. So...
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by lunch!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10:35. I guess, as we just demonstrated, just pick your favourite theory and then probably abandon it as and when this ends. And unless, of course, there is a highly unlikely outcome that they have somehow brought peace to the Middle East, which is what they promised to do when they invaded Iraq, and it's what they promised to do when they invaded Afghanistan, and it's what they promised to do when they bombed Libya. I don't know how you cling to the idea that that is a, how would you describe it? A viable plan, when all of the evidence of the same plan in the very recent past is so utterly, utterly damning. You also, of course, have the promise that Donald Trump campaigned on, which was that they wouldn't be getting involved in any wars in the Middle East. So, your support for this one hinges upon the fact that, oh, no, I knew he was lying then. I supported him because I knew when he said he wasn't going to get involved in any wars in the Middle East, that I knew that he was. So he's definitely the guy that can be trusted. So you've got the precedence of bringing peace to the Middle East. You've got the absolute contradictions, not only of his own previous policy statements, but also of his very recent rationales for doing it. And you've got this, I don't know what it is, this sort of forlorn hope that somewhere in the middle of all those conflicting and contradictory statements lies the one you like. But when Donald Trump claims victory, it will not be for any of the reasons that have been given so far, because he hasn't given any reason that is feasible, plausible, or achievable. Liz is in Horsham. Liz, why is he doing it?
Ego, I think. I think we're dealing with a man with a huge misogynistic look at me, I can flex my muscles and do what I like ego, in the way he does with lots and lots of different things. And I'd love to know, does he know why he's doing it? I think he's a very dangerous man who is all important to himself, and he thinks he can just traipse over whatever he wants, and he's entitled to, and I don't know.
But then why now, then? Why is he doing it now?
Because he can.
And Iran's done nothing since the last attacks that escalates the situation there. Do you see what I mean? They've done nothing that provides a bigger rationale than they had last June when they achieved peace in the Middle East, when they achieved a generational victory. So why now?
I have absolutely no idea.
That's the point, isn't it? I think that's what we all struggle with. We hate having absolutely no idea. Even if you've been given a reason that turns out to be false, as we were with weapons of mass destruction. If you're given a dozen conflicting and contradictory reasons, you either have to support it without thinking, or by marrying yourself to some relatively fanciful notion of Donald Trump delivering peace in the Middle East, or you stop asking questions at all and just shout loudly about how supportive you are of the whole thing.
I really struggle to support him in anything, really, because I think his ego just gets in the way, and I'm Donald Trump, I can do whatever.
And no one mentions 2018. I mean, in the context of what would be the vaguely rational end game in terms of peace, Trump withdrew the US from the nuclear deal in 2018. I think probably simply because it had been signed by a president he didn't like, and then the whole thing collapsed and Iran ramped up work on uranium enrichment and other aspects of the program. So there's another question that you add to the list. You want to come and offer up one analysis of the situation, then the question you have to be asked is, why did he pull out of the nuclear deal in 2018 then? If the end game is peace or a removal of nuclear capability, not even a removal, a cessation of progress towards a largely fanciful nuclear capability, if that was really the reason why they're doing it, why did he pull out of that deal that was working back in 2018? I don't think anyone can answer these questions. And that, as I keep saying, is the point. There is no earthly way you can defend any single rationale that's been given for the war while accommodating the existence of all the other rationales that are given for the war. There's no reason to do that unless there's no rationale. Unless there is no overarching reason for doing it, except the one that you're not going public with, which leads to all manner of speculations and borderline conspiracy theories, most obviously Epstein and all money. And you know, who here would stake their house on the claim that Donald Trump hasn't undertaken a war in Iran for intensely venal and personal reasons? But they're never going to tell you that. They'll tell you every reason under the sun, except perhaps the one that's true. Peter is in Hampstead. Peter, what would you like to say?
James, I'm calling it quantum politics.
Gosh, quantum politics.
Yes, you can choose whatever you want at any particular time to actually prove your value. And that is whether you're president, whether you're secretary of warmongering, whatever.
You can't prove it. You can just insist that it's true.
At that particular moment. That's
at that particular moment. It's because Donald Trump has a feeling. It's because they found someone who wanted to kill him. It's because they want to change the regime. It's because they care about the human rights abuses. It's because they're about to develop a nuclear bomb. It's because. And even though they're all speaking from the same building, the same regime, and they're all saying contradictory things, in Marco Rubio's case, contradicting Marco Rubio as of 24 hours ago, none of that matters, because all that matters is that singular moment in which they say the thing that needs to be true in that singular moment.
Quite, absolutely. Now, I was listening to BBC Strong Message here this morning, and I think Dom Jolly came up with Schrodinger's cat, right, which is the quantum theory that I have, that when you open the box, whatever argument you want to justify whatever you want to do, you open the box and you just say what's in the box. And it will change every single moment just to support your argument.
And then, I mean, I don't think we're wasting our time because we're pointing that out. But it ultimately achieves nothing but understanding, comprehension and fear.
You've got no solidity. You've got nothing to actually stand and have an argument for.
So it's Schrodinger's war objectives, essentially.
Yeah, quite, yeah. And if you open that box and you say a lie, you can 1 minute later open the box again and say it's the truth.
And that's what Marco Rubio did yesterday.
And you had Hesketh saying his particular lie about torpedo being the first since the Second World War sinking a ship. Well, tell me about the Belgrano.
That's a very good point. I don't know if he's... Do you know, again, with so many of these people, and this is just a parlour game now, are they lying or are they just ignorant?
I'd say it's a combination of it all.
Doesn't it? Can it be both at the same time? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, this point about a preemptive strike, for instance, lying and it's against, let's say, international law, Now, what would happen if eventually, as we think will happen with AI, all law will be controlled by AI? It's all written down in the rule book. But if you want to change the rule book, AI will be the considering factor on your decisions for the future in Schroeder's war box.
What is achievable and what is not achievable, and it's not about the objectives of the war, it's about how much of the public you can persuade to go along with whatever it is you're doing, regardless of whether or not the rationale that you're offering up is accurate or not. So, I didn't write down the list of reasons we were making, but apart from the first caller, Max, the idea that you can accommodate all of them in any analysis is clearly pie in the sky, or you can do what he did, which is just to pick the one you like with no real evidence for it and insist that that is the real reason, and cross your fingers and hope that the reasons given for Iraq and the reasons given for Afghanistan and the reasons even given for Libya are the real reasons why he's doing this, and that somehow Donald Trump is possessed of diplomatic and military skills that will exceed all of the leaders that failed in Iraq, failed in Afghanistan, and failed in Libya. And that brings me to the second thing that interests me most at the moment, which is the personal depravity of Donald Trump, and whether we shouldn't be factoring it in so strongly to these conversations and these decisions. I will struggle to see how you can make that argument, but I'd love to hear it. I don't think I obsess about how awful he is, because it should obsess everybody that men are starting wars on the say-so of somebody who is so obviously venal and so obviously depraved. Even if you confine yourself to the things he has admitted that he does, as opposed to the things that he has lied about, like being exonerated by the Epstein files, this is a man who represents the very antithesis of any value system. The very antithesis of any value system. You want to talk about a Christian value system, then read the Ten Commandments and apply them to Donald Trump one by one and get back to me in a couple of minutes. So the personal depravity of Donald Trump means that even if you could be persuaded that one of these 12, 13, 14 reasons given for the war in Iran was the correct reason, and that is actually what they're secretly trying to do, who could possibly believe that Donald Trump is the man to do it? That's the bit I, perhaps, outside of wars, struggle with most. How much more evidence do you need that you can't trust this man? I was talking to Anthony Scaramucci the other night about Donald Trump, a fascinating man who's got a brilliant book coming out in September. I say brilliant, I'm only about 50 pages into it, it's brilliant so far. And he had an explanation that was at the same time familiar and illuminating about exactly what explains that part of Trump's emotional appeal, and I'll share that with you after this.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I can't say that I disagree with the Prime Minister. That there was no real plan, I think, is probably a good reason for Keir Starmer not to have got involved with the initial assault. Because I haven't heard from the Americans that there is a plan here for regional stability that means that, if we're going to be very selfish about it, you're not going to see your energy bill rise by 10% in the next few months, or your car be fueled by petrol that is going to cost an absolute fortune.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili. Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website, and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
When you're smiling.
Banning dental.
dental group clinics with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters!
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hotpoint, Beko and Hoover. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at $39.99.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:49. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Sometimes it seems as if the only thing you can say with any certainty about Donald Trump's activities on the world stage, his international conduct, is that Vladimir Putin will like it. At first glance, you might think, well, hang on, Iran and Russia are allies. But how much attention is currently being paid to Russia's illegal war in Ukraine? We're all too busy talking about Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's probably illegal attacks upon Iran. Probably not definitely. Good piece by Jeffrey Robertson in one of the newspapers today about why there might be a legal justification for these attacks, but it is not the one that has been offered up by either regime in Israel or in the United States of America. So the only thing you can ever say with any confidence is that Vladimir Putin won't object. Another report in one newspaper today about how China are pretty relaxed about all this as well, despite also being nominal allies of Iran. So we don't know why he's done it. And that, I think, is the point. On the subject of the possible peace in the Middle East, reports coming in the last few minutes that the IRGC are claiming to have hit a US tanker and six people have been injured in Abu Dhabi, which, of course, is where our first caller was ringing from. Six people injured in the last few minutes by debris there from a drone. I don't mean this to sound trivialising, but Iran's capabilities are comparatively pathetic. So some of the drones that they're sending into the sky are effectively antiques. There was some controversy either yesterday or the day before about the amount of money the missiles that the RAF are firing to take down drones that cost tuppence halfpenny, cost the Ministry of Defence, cost the British taxpayers. So that's relevant. It's why, as with Hezbollah, actually, in Lebanon, they will fire things towards Israel that actually do no damage at all, and Israel will respond by killing hundreds of people in Lebanon. But they're still firing them. So, and one of them will work. One day is the hope of the people firing them. So you again have this horrible, this hideous nuance whereby you fire something largely ineffective, but it is still frightening and might be effective one day. And you provoke by doing that the single most powerful and expensive military capabilities that the world has ever seen. You bring them down upon yourself by launching glorified fireworks into the sky. I don't know that it can be any different. If you don't want to bring it down upon yourself, don't launch the glorified fireworks into the sky. To which Iran might respond by saying, this time, well, we didn't. No, but you did murder loads of your own citizens. Yeah, but we've always done that. Why are you attacking us now? And that's the question no one can answer. Why are you attacking us now? Liz is in Stirling. Liz, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think the thing here is that he's not declaring an objective. He's putting up a lot of fog about what the objective is because he wants to stop operations at some point and declare a victory. And he can only do that if we don't know what the objective is. And in the meantime, all of us thinking about what the objective is, well, we're not talking about the Epstein files, are we?
I wonder when my pendulum swung on this, because I used to be allergic to dead cats, Liz. I used to need weapons grade antihistamines before I could deal with dead cats being brought up on the programme, because it seemed like a simplistic answer to a complicated question. Why are they doing this to distract attention from that? But I don't start sniffling or sneezing anymore, because I it's not going away. He's lying about it. You can always tell he's worried about something by the strength of the lie that he tells, and to claim that the papers that have been released completely exonerate him is a lie that's visible from space. But I mean, even a year ago, maybe, before the second term got underway, the idea that he would start a war in the Middle East and the unknown numbers of casualties that would ensue, rather than simply do what he said he was going to do when he was campaigning to become president and release all of the Epstein files, I'd have gone, no, come off it. Nobody's that unhinged and or depraved, but they are, aren't they?
They are, and I don't think he doesn't care about the dead people. He doesn't care that, you know, schools have been bombed and
Excuse me, madam, you're speaking about the recipient of the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize.
How stupid of me. I'm so sorry, James. My first appearance, such an own goal. I'm so sorry.
Who here would want to accuse the recipient of the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize of being callous, uncaring or cruel? Guess who said this? And guess when? Monumental damage was done to all nuclear sites in Iran, as shown by satellite images. Obliteration is an accurate term, exclamation mark. The white structure shown is deeply embedded into the rock, with even its roof well beyond ground, and completely shielded from flame. The biggest damage took place far below ground level. Bullseye! And this appears on an official document that opens with the sentence, "The world is far safer after President Donald J. Trump's highly successful, decisive precision strikes against the Iranian regime's key nuclear facilities." Any thoughts on who said that and when?
Oh, God, I don't know. I'm going to guess, if it's not him, then it's one of our... It's him, is it? Oh, well, there we go.
And in the dim and distant mists of time? June 2025, so well under a year ago, the claim was that they'd completely obliterated all the things that they now need to attack Iran to re-obliterate, to use a word that I don't think previously existed. Liz, thank you. Argue with that. You flood it with any theory you want. And whatever transpires, you cannot be accused or you cannot have failure proved, because you will literally be able to say, no, hang on. I mean, I may have said that was the plan, but I also said that was the plan. And just because that plan hasn't come to fruition, or that plan for that matter, doesn't mean that I failed, because I offered up lots of other... Every single plan has failed. No, it hasn't, because we did bomb Iran, which is what we said we were going to do. That will probably end up being the only rationale. Why did you go to war in Iran? To bomb Iran. That's the only thing you can't argue with. Why did you do it? Because we wanted to bomb Iran. Did it succeed? Yes, we bombed Iran. Why did you bomb Iran? To bomb Iran. Have you read Catch 22 by Joseph Heller? So many of these books that are seminal, when you read them as a younger person, you don't fully get why they're seminal. And the reason why they're seminal, of course, is they're written by people who are older than you who understand the world. Or not necessarily even that old, but they've lived through times you haven't lived through. So Heller lived through Vietnam and Korea, crucially, I think Vietnam, in the context of Catch-22. It's a while since I've read it. And Orwell, of course, saw the rise of Stalin and the rise of Hitler. So they write these books about eternal truths, about universal truths. If you read Catch-22, then the idea that they will ultimately claim that the reason why they went to war in Iran was to go to war in Iran will actually make sense to you. That's what Catch-22 is, essentially. You can only go home from war if you're mad, but if you want to go home from war, you can't possibly be mad, therefore you can't go home from war. That's the central premise of the entire novel. Major and Yossarian and all those magnificent characters, or being a particular favourite of mine, paint a picture of a world in which it becomes perfectly feasible for a US president to say, I think you'll find the only reason we went to war in Iran to go to war in Iran. And that's what we'll be left with when everything else has fallen away. The regime change has failed or happened in a way that would make it clear it was not something that should have been wished for in the first place. The human rights abuses have either got worse or been completely forgotten. The replacement with his son has made a mockery of most of the claims made about why they were doing it. The argument that it was done because someone was planning to murder Donald Trump, but we can't tell you who it was, can never be proved. The fact that this war was started because Donald Trump had some feelings, vibes, the world's first vibe war, will be conveniently shoved into a bottom drawer, and all you'll be left with is the war was a success because the war was designed to be a war. Teresa is in El Paso in Texas. Teresa, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello,
so Teresa. I'd like to give you some insight as to how the voter in the United States is moving that might answer your question as to why we're bombing Iran now, since, as you pointed out, they've been killing their people for years. So there has been, there's a big movement here, especially with the younger voters, very angry about the slaughter in Palestine. And so voters, some voters are being targeted and making sure that they do not vote for politicians who are Zionists, who take money from AIPAC, American Israeli Political Action Committee. And so you're seeing some politicians who are not Zionists get elected to positions here in the United States. So, for example, we just had our primary in Texas yesterday. The runoff will be in May, and then the general will be in November. That's important to your question because there's going to be a change in Congress in November, and we're going to try and get in people who are not Zionist.
I'm just going to qualify your use of that word, because I mean, it was, I think Oscar Wilde said that we're two people divided by a common language. So I think you're using it to describe people who would never really be able to criticize any action by any Israeli regime or administration, people who are comfortable or supportive of the genocide in Gaza. We often use it simply to mean somebody who believes in the right of the modern state of Israel to exist, or like me, somebody who believes that it's a historical necessity that the state, the modern state of Israel exists, but not...
It covers both, James.
Okay.
It's both at this point.
I don't think many people listening to this have got a problem with the second definition of Zionism. Very few people would not want the modern state of Israel to exist, but most people listening to this will be wishing that they hadn't just done a genocide.
I think that the way it's being used here is we have politicians who believe that Israel is first.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what I just wanted to clarify. That's chiefly what you mean by that word, which isn't necessarily, that's why it's a tricky word these days to use, and not, of course, entirely by accident. So how does this garner support for that position? How does this attack on Iran perhaps boost support for that position?
No, it doesn't.
Right.
So what happened is, Netanyahu has basically been parked at the White House since Trump has been in office. He's been here, I don't know how many times.
Yes.
He might even be here now. And so it's obvious to us that he's lobbying Trump to do something to Iran. And before there's a change in Congress in November.
So this explains the timetable.
Right. This is their last chance to do what they want to do unfettered, is the way we see it. And so he goes in, he bombs Iran, he gives whatever answer. We did it because we needed to. We did it because Israel was going to do it, and so we had to help. But we did it because they chant death to America, death to Israel, which they've been chanting since 1979. I mean, whatever. He's just throwing it out there. But the reason is because Netanyahu said so, and this is prior to the changes that are going to occur.
But if he doesn't need congressional approval to do anything, and the Senate backed him up on that yesterday, of course, why does where does the sense of urgency come from? If he's not going to secure Congress?
Because, James, he might need it in after November. There might be such a change in Congress after November that we might actually have representation. We might actually have
so
a
So it's
Congress
now or never.
Right now or never.
Not necessarily now or never, but a big enough possibility that it's now or never for it to have to be now.
There's such an urgency in this.
Yes, there is,
and
isn't
if you
there?
Follow what I'm telling you, it'll be clear. It's so clear.
Thank you, Teresa.
You're welcome.
It is. Bye-bye. It is. We're getting a lot of business, for want of a better word, in the United States of America at the moment. Simon Marks turning into a superstar over there. And when you look at the state of the US media, you can understand why. You really can. And that's reflected by the number of people from the States. In fact, we've topped and tailed that hour. The first call from Abu Dhabi, shortly before, six people are injured in a downed drone scenario. And the final call from the heart of Trump country in Texas. It is 11:03.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play. Today, LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Defence Minister has arrived in Cyprus following criticism the UK's not doing enough to protect RAF bases there. The Treaty of Guarantee, which was signed more than 60 years ago, agreed Britain would take responsibility for the security of the island. LBC's deputy political editor, Aggie Chambray, says John Healey is hoping to calm tensions.
His visit, of course, comes after that drone hit RAF base at Akrotiri in Cyprus, and two more drones were intercepted too. So John Healey here to meet his Cypriot counterpart, that's the Greek defence minister Nikos Dendias, and he's likely too to be visiting British forces personnel protecting the country's interests in the Middle East.
The government is also insisting the first repatriation flight to bring home British nationals from the region will leave tonight. It was due to depart from Oman yesterday, but was grounded following major delays. Border Security Minister Alex Norris has given LBC this update.
It didn't take off because there were operational reasons about getting passengers on board, and it wasn't able to happen in the time that it had to happen. So that's now going to go today instead.
Explosions have been reported across the Middle East overnight as the conflict enters its sixth day. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says Britain will be in trouble if it doesn't join bombing raids on Iran. Elsewhere, the husband of a Scottish Labour MP has been released on bail after being questioned on suspicion of spying for China. Joni Reid backed her husband David Taylor after he was detained yesterday. Regulator Ofwat has fined South East Water £22 million for supply issues. More than 286,000 people in Kent and Sussex had problems with their supplies between 2020 and 2023. And a study has found weight loss jabs could treat addiction to alcohol, cigarettes and drugs. Scientists in the US believe they cut cravings by changing the brain's reward pathway. The study was based on more than 600,000 US veterans with type 2 diabetes. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 36 points at 10,604. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
You wouldn't steal a car. You wouldn't steal a handbag. You wouldn't enjoy a meal without an ice-cold, refreshing Pepsi Max. A tasty meal without Pepsi Max? That's criminal. Treat your food with respect, because meals are better with Pepsi. See it. Say it. Sip it. Pepsi Max.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Eleven oh six is the time, and of course there's another rationale for why Donald Trump is at war in Iran at the moment that we have omitted from the first hour of the programme, but we did cover it on yesterday's programme, and that is because God wants him to be there. You'll be aware that US military commanders have been invoking extremist Christian rhetoric about biblical end times to justify involvement in this war to their own troops. This is according to numerous complaints, as Simon Marks explained to us yesterday, I think more than 200, and that was 24 hours ago, to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, because, of course, there'll be service members of all faiths and none in the US armed forces, which includes the Marines, the Air Force, and even Space Force. One complainant, identified as an NCO, a non-commissioned officer, told the foundation in a complaint that's been seen by journalists that their commander urged us, this is to an officer, to tell our troops that this was all part of God's divine plan, and he specifically referenced numerous citations out of the Book of Revelation referring to Armageddon and the imminent return of Jesus Christ. So I'm afraid we have to add that to the list of why Donald Trump has gone to war. Because Armageddon is imminent and he is preparing for the imminent return of Jesus Christ. Or because he just had a feeling that they were going to attack America with weapons that they probably never had, and if they did, they definitely destroyed last June. Or because they found somebody in the regime who was going to kill Donald Trump, but they can't tell him as who it was or is. But they had to kill him in order to protect the president. or because they are very, very concerned about the human rights abuses. And nothing says stop killing innocent civilians like running an organisation like ICE that kills innocent civilians. Or it is because they want regime change. And they had some candidates in place who they thought would be suitable replacements for the Ayatollah, but they accidentally killed them all. And now it looks like the candidate most likely to succeed the Ayatollah is the Ayatollah's son. Ayatollah Junior, as he's known to his mates. If he has any. Which seems unlikely. Until you remember what these regimes are like. And the religious dimension that bestows sacred status upon these people. Potentially. I don't think he's quite reached boss level yet, like his father did. So, I mean, the list of reasons that has been given is as long as your arm. And most of them contradict the last ones. I'd be wary that it sounded a little bit anti-Semitic to put forward Marco Rubio's original account of why this was happening. But he's the Secretary of State. He is in, to paraphrase the best musical ever written, he is in the room where it happens. And he said it was because Benjamin Netanyahu was going to attack Iran and we couldn't stop him, therefore we had to get our retaliation in first. And 24 hours later, he denied that he'd said that. He undid those words. So that's two more theories as to why it's happened, or at least a theory that quickly becomes an untheory. And I've said a few times, I'm only half joking on the program, that I can't keep count. Then you've got the borderline, or what once would have been, conspiracy theories. He is doing it to keep the Epstein story out of the news, or at least to distract attention from the Epstein story. He's doing it because Vladimir Putin wants to distract attention from the, and of course, resources and support from Ukraine, from the war in Ukraine. The maddest one of all, perhaps, and yet, again, I mean, would you really bet your house against it being true that there's some massive kickback? Just a question, I'm only asking questions. Could there be some massive kickback in place, either traditional, i.e., you know, defence or oil-based profits, cryptocurrency, I don't know, or very, very base and obvious kickbacks? Just a question. Because if you can't provide the proper answer to the question, you leave a vacuum into which anything can move. And I think perhaps the daftest one of all is the idea that this is a carefully thought through plan to deliver peace in the Middle East. You kind of hope that's true. But you can't really hold on to much hope if you're even vaguely aware of what happened in Iraq, what happened in Afghanistan, and what happened in Libya. And that's just within the last 20 or 30 years. Never mind if you were to go back still further. Speaking of going back further, I made a deliberate mistake in the last hour. Did you notice it? Good. All right, I'll tell you what it was. Catch 22, set in the Second World War, but published during the Vietnam War, which is where my confusion came from. But, of course, it satirizes with that. I mean, what satire does perfectly, of course, is combine bitterness with sweetness. It both provides a comedic thrill, but also a shiver of recognition and plausibility. The best satire treads perilously close to reality, doesn't it? And that is what Catch-22 does. It's a masterpiece. You know, I met Joseph Heller once. I'm going to tell you a story that loads of other people can tell as well, because I clearly was not the first or the only or the last person to whom he told this story. I met Joseph Heller when I was a gossip columnist, and he had a book out, and I used to have to go to these parties and go up to the famous people in the room and try and get them to say something that would make a line for the next day's newspaper. And if I was a bit fortified, you know, if I'd had a sherry or two, I would say things that were quite provocative. I must have told you the Sean Connery story a few times, but I went up to Joseph Heller and I asked him whether or not it bothered him. And I either said, and I wish I could remember, but as I said, a sherry had been enjoyed. I either said whether it bothered him that none of his subsequent books had been as successful as Catch 22, or none of his subsequent books had been as good as Catch 22. I hope I said successful, because that would be a measurable statistic, wouldn't it? Whereas if I'm saying none of your subsequent books have been as good as Catch 22, that makes me a really priggish little oik So I really hope I said successful. So I march up to Joseph Heller, the author of Catch 22, and I say, Mr. Heller, James O'Brien, the Daily Express, do you have a couple of moments? Yeah, of course I do. Of course. It was Welsh. And I said, I just wondered, I'd have gone in with a couple of soft ones. Are you having a nice time in London? How long are you here? Have you been, you know, do you have favourite spots? Maybe get a couple of lines out of that. And then I'd say something like, does it bother you that you haven't written a book as success? You haven't written another book as successful as Catch 22? And do you know what he said? He said, no, because nobody else has either. And I just thought, and there's no way that was a new one, was there? There's no earthly way he hadn't said that before. It was, because he said it with such a charming smile and such a disarming manner that I just floated out of the room. I just, to the other side of the room, probably for another sherry. I just thought, that is such a cool dude over there. Does it bother you? You've never written a book as successful as your first one. No, because nobody else has either. I don't know whether that's technically true or not, but it's not far off the mark, is it? What have you got from that era? You've got Catch 22, 20 years previously, you've got Catcher in the Rye. I mean, the great classic, you've got a couple of Hemingways in there probably, but the contenders to be the great American novel, maybe a bit of Updike. He's as good as any of those. Does it bother you? You never wrote another book as successful as your first one? No, James, because nobody else did either. Wow, that's amazing. 11:15 is the time. A little bit of light relief for you. Rather more light relief on the way at 12 noon, because it's Thursday, which means Mystery Hour will be upon us. Cam's been in touch. Say, you've told this story before, James. Well, it's not my fault you've got nothing better to do, is it? A lot of people have just heard it for the first time, Cam. Have a bit of grace. I don't know if you're ready to answer this question yet, or indeed if you'll ever want to, but how do people... And I might mean you on this, okay? So don't just send me rude texts demonstrating the fact that you don't understand anything. Tell me why you don't care that Donald Trump is so obviously awful. I've noticed that the phrase Donald Trump or Trump derangement syndrome has disappeared from all but the smallest vocabularies now, because obviously you are talking about somebody who is off the charts, unhinged, off the charts, morally corrupt. But how do you leave that at the door? So if Ronald Reagan was in charge, they wouldn't have done what they've done, actually, because he passed a law to outlaw it. Not that that has curtailed Donald Trump in any way. But if George W. Bush was in charge, a man who is getting quite a retrospective rehabilitation, isn't he, in comparisons to Donald Trump. Trump making George W. at the moment look like one of the cleverest men that ever walked the earth. But you have this historical or traditional analysis of situation. Some wars you approve of, you support, some wars you don't, and then the events transpire to reveal whether it was a good idea or a bad idea, with the constant caveat that it could, of course, have gone differently. That's been blown up completely for the reasons that we've been discussing all morning. So how do people leave Donald Trump's personality out of their pontifications? Because really, in many ways, it may be it seems to me highly, highly unlikely, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility that in a year or 2 years' time, we will be able to say, no, they did the right thing. It was the right thing to do, even if it was against international law. I don't think this is going to happen, but never say never. Nothing is impossible. It would be a stop clock being right twice a day kind of scenario, but we might be sitting here in 5 years. If they haven't let me retire. We might be sitting here in 5 years and saying, well, you know, who'd have thought back then that this would turn out to be a good thing? But how do you go along with it knowing who's in charge? That's the bit that I find genuinely baffling. You can't not know that he's a multiple felon. You can't not know that he's a multiple bankrupt. You can't not know that he lies about elections and continues to, that he abuses everybody from dead soldiers right through to John McCain. You can't not know that the woman who accused him of rape, he sued for libel and lost. You can't not know that he boasts about grabbing women by their private parts. You can't not know any of these things. You can't not know he was best friends with Jeffrey Epstein for 15 years. You can't not know he's probably the only man in history who managed to make a casino go bankrupt. You can't not know any of these things. And that's just, you know, a very brief little list of examples. You can't not know any of these things. So how can you think, yeah, all right, he's not perfect, but let's follow him into war in the Middle East? I don't get that. I don't think I ever will. I don't know that anybody does. I suspect it's one of those things that you either feel or you find utterly, utterly repellent. Yeah, I'm fine with him, James. I don't care about all those things. Fake news or something? And I definitely think he's the guy to start another war in the Middle East. Or you can somehow assemble an argument that says, no, none of that matters. I know it's all true. He's all of those things. But on this, I support him because that's the bit I don't get. Is it wrong, in other words, for me and possibly for you, to focus so much upon the personal depravity of Donald Trump, the personal delinquency, the moral corruption, and, of course, the illegality of his past conduct, the obvious lies? Should that play? I mean, because I don't know that I'll ever be persuaded that it shouldn't. But it obviously should, shouldn't it? If you're going to hire someone to do a job, how much do you want to know about them? Well, James, it depends how big the job is. Exactly.
This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 21 minutes after 11. Aggie Chambray, our deputy political editor, is in Cyprus today, where the Defence Secretary, John Healey, is scheduled to visit. We'll catch up with her shortly. Before that, back to the question I am asking, which is, why is Donald Trump doing this now? 0345 60 60 973. And the second question, which we're probably not going to get any answers to today, which gives you a quick heads up as to what might come up tomorrow, is whether there's any case at all for arguing that we shouldn't focus so much upon the personal depravity of the American president. For that very simple reason, if you want someone to do a job for you, how much do you want to know about them? To which the answer surely is, well, it depends entirely on how big the job is. And they don't come much bigger than this. Words to warm the cockles of my heart next. Balama is in Lambeth. Balama, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Fantastic show, as always.
You're very kind.
I thought, James, your list was brilliant, but I think you are giving Trump and his people more credit than they deserve.
That's my curse. That's my curse, Balama. Go on.
I think they are not giving all of these contradicting reasons because they want to confuse us. I think it is because they are confused themselves. I think what might have happened is someone went to Trump and told him, look, you have got to do this because all American presidents wanted to do it, but no one could do it. And Trump wants to do something no one else did or has ever tried. And that's why everything he does, he will say, his buildings are the most beautiful ever in the world.
His economy
is the best in history, in the history of the U.S. Everything Trump does is the best, and he's the first in everything. And now someone tells him, look, do this because no American president could do it in the past. And so he called Rubio and others and said, do it. And they don't know why. And they get keep getting asked, why are you doing that? They don't know why Trump is doing it, and so they just have to make up reasons. And that's why everyone is just coming up with whatever comes to their mind. And that's why we have all these contradictory reasons.
So, I mean, the only real question left is who persuaded him to do it? I mean, by using that very seductive rhetoric and saying you could be... So you, what would you do, though? Would you say, look, they failed in Iraq, they failed in Afghanistan, they failed in Libya, and most people would then go, well, then it would be madness to try the same plan in Iran, to which Trump would respond by saying, I'm so amazing, I can actually do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because he believes he would succeed or do what other things, what other people couldn't do. But James, the reasons they offer that scare me the most is a reporting from the CNN, I think yesterday or day before yesterday, in which they said they interviewed some Kurds and that the CIA is now working with the Kurds to arm them so that they could fight the regime. And I think if that happened, what we might see is a terrible civil war in Iran, in which Iranian civilians are going to suffer in unspeakable ways.
Yeah.
And
he'll just not talk about it again. So, I mean, if events are so hideous that even he can't put a positive gloss on them, we'll just never hear about it again from him. He'll do what he's done with Epstein. He'll claim he's been completely exonerated. It was a great success. And if you ask me any more questions, you won't be coming to another press conference.
Yeah, and of course, if you keep asking him questions, he will then come up with something even bigger or something as big so that he can detract from that or distract people and so that no questions will be asked on this. We are now asking no questions on the border of peace, on Gaza, on Epstein, and all of those issues because he has brought this one up. And on the question of the terrorist groups, James...
Yes. No, well, just for people who don't know, this is Bilama's field of expertise. I mean, Islamist extremists in general, Boko Haram... Boko Haram especially, but this is extremist groups, things about which you know more than the average bear, Bilama.
So, James, you are very kind. There are about 10 main violent extremist groups in sub-Saharan Africa. None of them was inspired by the Iranian Shia interpretation.
Right.
None of them is supported by Iran, and there is no global terrorist organization that is supported or that is inspired by Iran. All of them are inspired by the Sunni, not the Shia interpretation of Islam. And I say this as someone who is Sunni myself, but none of them is inspired by the Sunni interpretation. And what scares me is that I did make this point briefly some time ago.
Yeah.
But the reason why we do not have groups that are inspired by the Shia interpretation is because they see Iran as their caliphate. You know, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, they say they want to set up an Islamic caliphate. For the Shiites, they see Iran as their caliphate and the Ayatollah as their caliph, and therefore there was no need to fight. And if Trump succeeds in bringing them down, I can tell you, I can bet my bottom dollar that we are going to see groups emerging, global terrorist organizations emerging, to fight for the establishment of or re-establishment of their caliphate, the one that was destroyed in Iran.
Wow.
And even if Iran, sponsors terrorism or is engaged in violence in countries, I think if you have a government that is doing that, then it is easier to contain and control than to have groups dispersed across the world fighting in the name of something that they firmly believe in, which there is no single authority that controls them to go one way or the other.
Yikes. Sorry, I've got nothing more profound to say. You often do this to me. And if I marry that analysis to the reports today of nuclear experts warning that the onslaught could backfire to the point where the regime is better equipped to make a secret bomb, then... You have yet another picture of why people cheering this along or claiming that we should be doing more or that Keir Starmer should be more supportive look even more ridiculous. It occurs, I don't know what's going on in the background, Bilama, but it sounds very exciting. The final thing I'd put to you is, and you're much more polite than I am, But when right-wing politicians in this country, like Farage or Badenoch, try to create the idea that Keir Starmer is holding back from joining in this attack on Iran because he's worried about the, quotes, Muslim vote, end quotes, in this country, they display a level of ignorance that has to be deliberate, right, of what that means in the context of what you've just reminded us regarding Sunni and Shia interpretations of Islam.
Exactly. I think so. And James, I think Farage, I mean, I don't count Farage as, I mean, I don't estimate him at all.
No.
Badenoch herself doesn't have any integrity. I think what they see themselves is that they have a duty to oppose every single thing Keir Starmer stands for, even if that is true. And I can, I mean, from the way they behave, if Starmer today says the United Kingdom is one, I think Farage and Badenoch will come out and say, no, it is not. It should be divided because they want to oppose Keir Starmer in every single way possible.
And it is footballification at its most dangerous and ultimately unpatriotic as well.
Yeah. And for a country that builds itself as a 21st century civilization that is based on the rule of law, for you to be criticizing your leader who says, I have gotten a legal brief that this is illegal in favor of someone. Have you ever had Trump say, I have ever referred this issue to my legal team? Trump doesn't even talk about law. He has never referred it to anyone. He doesn't care whether it's legal or illegal. But the prime minister here has referred it to his legal team and they said it's illegal. Yet he is being criticized for being a lawyer, not a leader, for being too legalistic, for being a government run by human rights lawyers. In Britain, do we want Britain to be ruled by lawless people if we don't like lawyers ruling the country? I mean,
what's the alternative?
What are we talking about?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, the final point, James, sorry, is that, you know, Trump calls on Iranians to pick up arms and fight the regime. And all the estimates we have, even if we go by the estimates we see from activist organizations and all that, at least 20% of Iranians support the regime. They say they have been indoctrinated and they have been brainwashed.
Yeah.
But whatever the case may be, there are about 20 million who support the regime. And in this 20 million, a significant portion are people who are in the security forces, who can operate arms and munitions, who have access because they are in custody of the arms and munitions of the country right now. And you want civilians who are unarmed to, or who do not have any arms to fight
to go up against
them. And I don't know where, where that would lead people.
Ah, oh, you've done it again.
In addition to all of that, we are made to believe, and I think it is true, that these people have been highly radicalized. That is why they are supporting the regime.
Of course, no. I mean, it's a crucial part, and that reminds us once again of your own field of expertise. Are you still at the Bridgeway Foundation? I don't want to misdescribe you.
Yes, I am still at the Bridgeway Foundation, continuing to do the work we have been doing. And I'm sorry, I am calling you from a train station. I am calling from Victoria train station because I couldn't resist it. I have resisted you for quite some time, and at least, especially over the last 3 days, but I couldn't resist this today. Sorry.
What on earth are you apologizing for? You're one of my all-time favorite callers, not just for me, but also for my listeners. Balama Bukati, currently Vice President of Programs and Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration and De-radicalization at the Bridgeway Foundation, a man who, unlike many of the voices that we're hearing in public discourse in this country at the moment, really does know what he's talking about. And if you'd allow me a brief boast, he's also one of the callers that we get on this program who get booked as guests by other people, by other broadcasters. And after the news, we've got another one of those as well. Lottie Morley's here first with your headlines.
The Defence Secretary is in Cyprus after the UK's response to a drone strike on an RAF base there was criticised by the Cypriot government. John Healey says the friendship between the two countries is still strong in the face of Iranian threats. The government says its first flight, chartered to bring home stranded Brits, will leave Oman this evening. It didn't take off last night as planned after suffering a number of setbacks, including a four-hour check-in process. The Home Secretary says the party needs to be more Labour when it comes to migration. Shabana Mahmood is giving a speech speech in London, setting out how the government will bring down the number of people coming to the UK. And the husband of a Scottish Labour MP has been released on bail after being questioned on suspicion of spying for China. Two other men were also arrested by the Metropolitan Police yesterday. Joni Reid says she has no reason to think her husband David Taylor has broken any law. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most of England and Wales. Outbreaks of rain in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
it? The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our first drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search First Drive Weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right. Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and two sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats, and get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:35. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So the Mooch, as he's known, and he is every bit as charming as he comes across on various podcasts and programs. Anthony Scaramucci, who I was with the other night. This isn't like earth-shatteringly new, but his analysis of Trump focuses upon his language of grievance. But those of us who can't quite understand why anybody goes along with him, it's because he is permanently aggrieved. So it's almost like a form of emotional osmosis. Even though the people who've been dispossessed by the deindustrialization of America and the departure, and this is all in Scaramucci's new book, which is out in September. But even though Trump doesn't give a monkey's about them, he understands grievance because he is grievance made flesh. He is constantly aggrieved, constantly belittled, constantly emasculated, constantly humiliated. He spends his life in a state of permanent humiliation, emasculation, humbling. And therefore, people who have a good cause to feel aggrieved because they're earning a fraction of what their fathers earned for doing the same job, if the job even still exists, they see in him a reflection of their own grievances, even though his grievances are venal and vile, and theirs are justified. I'll give you an example, because as Balama was just talking about Trump's desire to be the biggest or to be the best or to be the first, there are some things in his past that you think must be mythologized, that can't quite be true, can it? And then you check and it is true. So on the 11th of September 2001, a day that doesn't need me to remind you of its significance, Donald Trump phoned a television station in the United States, WWOR, to talk about the day's tragic events. And he talked about being told about the World Trade Center being attacked, to which his response was 40 Wall Street, a building he owned at the time, actually was the second tallest building in downtown Manhattan, and it was actually, before the World Trade Center, it was the tallest. And when they built the World Trade Center, it became known as the second tallest, and now it's the tallest. So in response to the worst terrorist atrocity ever visited upon American soil, Donald Trump's immediate response was to boast about the fact that it rendered his building the tallest in the city again. And it is almost beyond parody for me to tell you that even that wasn't true. So even as you marvel at the depravity and the disgusting nature of his personality, his character, who he is, he was also lying. And you tell me again why we should follow him into war. Or indeed in anywhere. Aggie Chambray, LBC's deputy political editor, is in Cyprus, where the Defence Secretary John Healey is scheduled to visit today, and she joins me now. Aggie, what have you been up to?
Well, James, I travelled last night with the Defence Secretary from London in a very small RAF jet, arriving in Cyprus very late last night. And the Defence Secretary is in Cyprus for a couple of reasons. Number one, of course, that drone hit the RAF base Akrotiri in Cyprus on very late on Sunday night. Two more drones intercepted on Monday. And partly he's here to calm tensions after anger from some in Cyprus that the UK isn't doing more to protect its bases on the island. The UK is sending HMS Dragon from Plymouth, but that's not going to arrive for over a week. So today, John Healey met his Cypriot counterparts, the Greek defence minister Nikos Dendias. And I'm told that that was a warm meeting, that the Greek defence minister called him a friend. He's also met some local community leaders and people, I'm told, are feeling more confident and more safe after those meetings and because of the defences, the Ministry of Defence says. But there has been this blowback from, among other people, the High Commissioner of Cyprus, who said Cypriots are disappointed in the actions of the UK. Kyriakos Choros has said the French are coming. The least we expect is that Britons will also be present, since we are not only defending Cypriots on the islands. And don't forget, James, of course, there's these very strong UK-Cypriot ties. The Treaty of Guarantee, which was signed more than 60 years ago, agreed Britain would take responsibility for the security of the island. Effectively, Britain was given sovereignty over two RAF bases here in return for security guarantees.
What will we see, do you think, today? I mean, I appreciate there'll be operational procedures in place that limit slightly what we will be aware of or can know in advance. But we'd expect a joint press conference, would we, or something like that at some point?
I don't think we're expecting a joint press conference. I mean, I am very much hoping that I will get the opportunity to speak to the Defence Secretary and ask some of those questions. Mm. And I can't kind of get into what his schedule is any further than that at this stage because of those security reasons. But it was interesting speaking about that drone, James, as well, because LBC picked up very late last night, and the MOD, the Ministry of Defence, wouldn't say where that drone that hit the Akrotiri base was from. They only said quite recently, in the last couple of days, that wasn't from Iran. Yeah. But we picked up very late last night that was sent from Lebanon or Western Iraq. And actually, sources have also suggested to us that the reason it wasn't picked up, essentially the reason it hit the base, was because it was so low, it was so slow, that it effectively evaded notice. And that's part of the reason they're now sending these Wildcat helicopters that they think will be able to detect drones like that in future.
With the Martlet drone-busting missiles, says everybody who's been on a crash course in modern armaments over the course of the last few days, which sadly excludes Kemi Badenoch, who demonstrated some extraordinary ignorance in PMQs yesterday, which other people have explained rather better than I can. Thank you, Aggie. We may talk again. Well, we probably won't, but I'm sure that you'll be on later with either Sheila or Tom Swarbrick, or quite possibly both. Some people are never happy, Christopher says. Please, can you ask your journalists to pronounce Akrotiri properly? They keep saying Akrotiri. Signomi, Christopher. Signomi, Polly. Michael is in Greenwich. Quick introduction. Michael is a former US diplomat whose tour, I think, included Middle Eastern countries, Mike.
Yes, it did. James, good to talk to you.
Always. What would you like to say today?
Well, I was going to paraphrase a comment that was made by an American journalist and historian, David Satter, in another context. But he said that, and he had said Russia is easy to understand, but I'll use his language. He said, I would say Trump is easy to understand, but it requires us to do something which is very difficult, which is to believe the unbelievable.
Yeah.
And most of us are so uncomfortable not knowing that we're willing to seize on any thought anything that will make us comfortable in the sense that we now know. When Trump's not that complicated, I would argue that he started this war because he had the capacity. Tragically, the American people, us, have given him control over this power, and he's cruel. And so when we've seen Venezuela, we've seen Iran, we now have U.S. soldiers on the ground in Ecuador. Yeah. It probably won't stop with Iran. And it goes back to who he is. There's no policy. It's not because, oh, there's elections coming. And no, this is what he does because of who he is. As you know, as you had said earlier, you know, from Scaramucci's, you know, it's who he is. But that's hard, I think, for most of us to accept, which is to accept.
And so everybody builds castles in the sky, whether they are sort of enthralled to Donald Trump or whether they are repulsed by him. We're all potentially guilty of building castles in the sky to fill that vacuum that is already full, and it's full of Donald Trump's warped character.
Yeah, but it's also, you'd mentioned Joseph Heller, which I think is very useful. First of all, I do have to correct you, if you don't mind.
I already did, but you do it again, because you'll do it so charmingly.
Yeah, he served in World War II.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was. But what he said once was, you know, what does a sane man do when, you know, the world's insane?
Yeah.
What does a sane man do in an insane society? And I'm not claiming sanity, but I think that's the challenge for all of us, is when we're faced with something that is so difficult to accept, even though it's simple. You know, I think we often confuse simple with easy. No, simple is often very difficult.
Well, the first thing you do is recognize the insanity, I suppose, and God only knows what follows. But the people who are in denial regarding the insanity become complicit in whatever follows, potentially.
Well, again, I think it's for so long, all of us have had a particular view of who Americans are, who we are, what we're capable of, and we're having to face the reality that we're as capable as anyone else of
it's a human condition. It's not confined to Russians or Germans or Chinese leaders. It's everybody's capable of witnessing this. The only thing I'd push you on is the timing, because I think why now? Because under that analysis of cruelty and capriciousness, it could have happened at any point. Is there any particular reason why it's happening now, do you think?
I don't think so. I think he does it when he does it. It's sort of the explanations he gives, because none of them really make any difference, in the sense that he did what he did because he can do it. And he did it now because I don't think there's any, you know, particular, there's not a lot of policy or even a lot of thought behind a lot of what he does.
He is. I'm reminded of a showerhead in the bottom of the bathtub that no one can control. And if you try and pick it up, all that will happen is that you'll get soaked as it sprays randomly in all various. To trying to analyze that or predict that bouncing showerhead in the bottom of the bathtub is a thankless task. But I guess you have to try. And that's where Joseph Heller came into it. The idea that ultimately we attacked Iran in order to attack Iran. Well, that's it. That's all we need. That's all there'll ever be.
Yeah, but again, it's very hard for us to accept.
It's impossible.
That.
It's impossible. I mean, you can accept it now.
We don't want to think that we live in a world where that's possible. No, but if we don't accept it, then it gives him even more power if we don't recognize it and accept it.
I couldn't. Well, thank you. My reassuring words, oddly, even as you describe insanity, because you've given us Joseph Heller. I'll raise you George Orwell. You will not go mad. If you can cling on to the truth, even against the whole world, you will not go mad. Thank you for Michael. And there's a lovely subtext from someone called Donald, appropriately enough, although I doubt it's that one, picking up on that phrase, that slight bastardization of Joseph Heller. We attacked Iran in order to attack Iran. Does it remind you of anything? Eh? Brexit means Brexit.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is Taxation Without Representation.
Straight to the point.
You get giddy with all these U-turns.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
AO members get 10% off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hire, AEG and Hisense. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at £39.99.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd quit my job and I'd finish my novel.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
Yes!
So, what's the book called?
Neil, the Vampire Detective.
Sounds awful.
Who cares? I'm rich!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder Which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 10 minutes to 12, and from the original to the Temu version, or the Pound Shop version, a little bit of focus on Nigel Farage, who has suddenly developed an aversion to opinion polls. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they never stop boasting about their lead in the opinion polls. They normally count all the opinion polls that have given them a lead. But it turns out that Nigel Farage actually, he doesn't have any faith or trust in opinion polls at all when it suits him.
Mr. Farage, yes. According to a Savation poll published in The Guardian today, more than half of Reform UK members believe non-white British citizens born abroad should be deported or encouraged to leave. Do you agree with them?
Yeah,
and on a second point...
Get down the pub at closing time. You can find all sorts of opinions. And it's not a Guardian poll. It's a Hope Not Hate poll, isn't it?
Public no, it's matter. A Savation poll.
Well, it's sponsored by Hope Not Hate. Am I wrong?
No, it was published in conjunction with Hope Not Hate.
But
it's a poll that's been verified by the National Polling Council.
Right, well, I will respond that polling in this country is all over the place, as you well know. We have six national polling companies put us on an average of 29.75%, and one polling company where we seem to be collapsing with every week that goes by. YouGov used to be the gold standard. I'm not quite sure what is going on. You can find specific people that will say almost anything in answer to a question.
I've lost this. The time is 11:52. Two things occur to me from that little exchange. A journalist there asking about some fascinating new polling, confirming what I think everybody probably knew to be true, just a question of how many of his followers are out-and-out, base, vile, National Front racists. Some people may be surprised that the number is so low. Others absolutely terrified that it is so high. But, we'll talk about that shortly with Joe Mulhall from Hope Not Hate. But did anybody else notice something else in the middle of that? What on earth is this?
Citizen.
What's that noise?
Citizen.
That's absolutely horrible. You could frighten children with that noise. You could literally download that onto your phone and say to your children, if you don't go to bed now or if you don't eat your peas, then this man will be coming round the house.
Your citizen.
It's like a cross between Mr. Burns and sort of, I don't know. Go on once more, just because I want to put Joe Mulhall off his stride before he comes onto the programme.
Your citizen.
There it is. More than half, Joe, of Reform UK members believe that non-white British citizens born abroad should be deported or encouraged to leave. Farage, as he does with elections that he doesn't like, has done with the poll that he doesn't like. He's attacked the poll in the same way that they attacked the electorate in Gorton and Denton. So a quick word on how it was undertaken and conducted.
Yeah, sure. And it's exactly as you say, you know, Farage has been spending months and months bragging about all the polling companies and the results. So when they're in his favour, he's obviously very complimentary about them. And the moment that a poll like this comes out, which reveals the really, really worrying extremism at the core and amongst the base of Reform, he all of a sudden questions the poll. Now, the poll was done by Servation, by a very legitimate polling company. It surveyed 629 Reform members between 29th of January and the 16th of February, which means that, you know, every pollster would accept that's a statistically valid number when it comes to the size of the party. And as you said, the findings are extraordinarily worrying. As you say, 54% would prefer having a strong and decisive leader, an authoritarian bent. Over half of them, as you say, members thought non-white citizens born abroad should be forcibly removed or encouraged to leave.
That would include Nadeem Zahawi.
Yeah, there's always been this contradiction within Reform. I mean, there's a huge amount of their policies that would have a really, really worrying effect on some people that support it or are members or even work for the party. I mean, the issue here is that Farage is attempting to present himself as though he's a mainstream political figure, that they're ostensibly, you know, like a mainstream political party. And the reality, of course, is not only are their policies far more extreme than any of the mainstream political parties have ever kind of proffered, their core base and their core supporter base is really, really in a very traditional far-right space.
And that's the key, because there might be a lot of people who aren't paying much attention and who are somewhat seduced or attracted by some of the milder extremes of the rhetoric, but the actual core, what we'd call in America the base, the people, we'd call it here the base as well, but the people who are sending money to Farage every month or every year, 270,000 of them, this polling suggests that they're quite comfortable with people like Rupert Lowe and Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, the serial criminal.
Yeah, it really goes to show, actually, how different the Reform supporter base is to where most of British people are. Mm. You know, I know that Farage will always talk about ostensibly they're just representing the common man. This is the will of the people. This is very mainstream and normal. But actually, the core base of the party is well to the right of where the British public generally is, whether or not it's on supporting Tommy Robinson, their support for people like Rupert Lowe, or even when it comes to things like twice as many Reform UK members like Putin than amongst the general public.
Wow. Do we know why?
Well, partly I think it's that there is, I mean, it's a very, very niche set of people in Britain that support Putin or that are sympathetic to Putin, especially, of course, since the war in Ukraine. And it just once again shows to show that the Reform supporter base is not the average man on the street. Reform support base is a far-right supporter base that is well to the right of where most people in British public are, despite what Farage might type to present himself and his party as.
So not so much a silent majority as a hideous minority, although, as you say, the electoral challenge. So the path to prominence for Nigel Farage has been racism. The path to power involves a dilution or an attempt at an abandonment even of the racism. How big a problem are the base going to be to that process?
Yeah, you make a really good point here, right? Farage has got a problem on his hands. As you say, the way he wins a general election is by attracting people from the centre ground of British politics, whereas a core element at the heart of his party is well to the far right of where most people in the British public are, and that creates a real tension. It's also worth mentioning there's now this party Restore, run by Rupert Lowe, which is to the right of Reform, again, which is already up to maybe 90,000 or over 90,000 members, which will also be pulling Farage to the right. He's got a real challenge on his hand. How does he keep this extreme base happy? By the way, the extreme base in many ways believe the same things that he does, while also attempting to attract enough people from the mainstream by presenting himself as a normal mainstream political party that's ostensibly the voice of the people. There's a real tension there.
And the tension that we can just watch, really, because no one can predict for sure how it's going to pan out. I mean, is there any historical precedent to this kind of process, to somebody kind of campaigning adjacent to fascism but seeking a path to power that involves abandoning it?
I mean, we've never had a radical right political party anywhere near this size in the UK. You know, Reform have got nearly 500 branches. They've got over 270,000 members. They've got over 900 councillors. They've got 8 MPs. They run 10 councils. Reform is a radical right party of a scale that we've just never seen in the UK. And there's never been a far right party that had anywhere near this many supporters or has had this close to power. But he's always got to understand that the people that are knocking on doors for him, the people that are going to Reform meetings, many of them will hold views that wouldn't have been dissimilar to what you would have heard from the British National Party. Yeah. And yet the BNP, understandably, was never going to get anywhere near power because of those extreme views. So how he keeps those two sides happy will be interesting to see. Part of the issue, however, is that around Reform, we've seen this really worrying normalisation of far-right politics. A lot of the rhetoric that we hear from Reform that would have traditionally been confined to the margins of our political discourse, we're now seeing through mainstream newspapers, we're now seeing talked about on mainstream media, and that's obviously normalising a politics which is making the, you know, the public at home more polarised and in some cases more extreme.
Have you been surprised by that? Have you been surprised by how feet first some people that were once vaguely sensible or who didn't actually seem to be fully paid up members of the far right have jumped aboard this change in discourse?
It's been really scary to see, right? There was lots of things that when I started at Hope Not Hates, you know, 15, 16 years ago, you would have only heard coming from really marginal extreme figures that a group like Hope Not Hate would monitor. You know, the big example I'd give is discussions about like identity being based on race and racial identity in the UK. Racial nationalism was something that was confined to really extreme fascist figures. Now there's a kind of a relatively mainstream debate happening in elements of our right-wing media about how racial elements are core to Britishness or core to Englishness. You know, we've really seen a leaking from the far right into the mainstream. And that's why groups like Reform, which should be understood and should be widely discussed as far right and extreme, are increasingly, we get pushback saying, that are they really far right? And that's because I think our whole discourse is shifting right in many ways.
And of course, they still insist, as you've just alluded to, that they reject the suggestion that they are far right. Fred's not convinced. He says, great interview. It feels so validating to hear this. We have heard a comment from Nigel Farage on this. Do you want to hear it, Joe?
Yeah, sure.
Bernard Manning.
There we go. I don't know if you have anything to say about that. Oh, hang on. No, he's. We've also got that lovely little sound. That other little. One more little thing from Nigel.
Citizen.
Joe Mulhall, thank you very much indeed. You can find out more about Hope Not Hate and the sterling work that they do across all forms of extremism, by the way. So quite why Farage would object to their brave work in the arenas of Islamist extremism is something that he can explain when he finally gets asked some difficult questions by journalists and is not permitted to ride roughshod over them as he did to that woman from The Guardian yesterday. 12:01 is the time. If you missed that interview, you probably need to know, particularly if you are from an ethnic minority, if you are a British person with some foreign heritage. Most Reform members believe that you, if you were born abroad and have become a British citizen, you should be forced or encouraged to leave. So that is au revoir off the top of my head to Boris Johnson, Nadeem Zahawi and Daniel Hannan. Mystery Hour next.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Defence Secretary is in Cyprus today after a drone hit an RAF base there earlier this week. The Cypriot government has criticised the UK for not doing more to protect them. Britain signed a treaty more than 60 years ago, agreeing to take responsibility for the security of the island. LBC's deputy political editor, Aggie Chambray, says John Healey is trying to calm the situation.
Partly he's here to calm tensions after anger from some in Cyprus that the UK isn't doing more to protect its bases on the island. The UK is sending HMS Dragon from Plymouth, but that's not going to arrive for over a week.
A flight chartered by the UK government to bring Brits home from the Middle East will depart today. It didn't leave Oman last night as planned, and the government has blamed operational challenges for the issues. Tom Hill is the director of commercial jets at charter company Victor. He's told LBC charter flights are not straightforward.
We're seeing things such as airspace closure due to military activity, airports closing without notice, and this could be for 30 minutes or a few hours, the legal amount of time that a flight crew can actually be flying live.
Explosions have been reported across the Middle East overnight as the conflict enters its sixth day. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says Britain will be in trouble if it doesn't join bombing raids on Iran. Elsewhere, the Home Secretary says the government needs to be more Labour when it comes to migration. Shabana Mahmood is setting out plans to bring down the number of people coming to the UK. She told our political editor Natasha Clark suggestions the move will give people an incentive to travel to the UK are wrong.
Both the Green Party and Reform are wrong. We already, and have under previous governments as well, offered incentive payments to people for them to leave this country to encourage that to happen.
And South East Water has been fined £22 million for repeated supply failures. Regulator Ofwat found more than 286,000 customers were affected by outages between 2020 and 2023. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 points at 10,587. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most of England and Wales this afternoon. Some outbreaks of rain for Scotland and Northern Ireland, though. Highs of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 4 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Your weekly opportunity. In fact, the first hour of the week so far. 11 hours talking about the situation in Iran and 1 hour on Mystery Hour. I wonder if we'll get to the end of the week with just that 1 hour that isn't focusing upon events in the Middle East. It's also the first one for a while, isn't it? It's upon us now. If you want to join in, 03456060973 is the number you need. The way it works is this. You have a question, a mystery, a riddle, something buried in the back of your brain or right on the tip of your tongue that needs a solution. It needs an answer. It needs unravelling. And you are confident, and if you weren't confident before, having listened to some of the calls we took in the last hour, you'll be confident now that we have the wisest audience in the history of phone-in radio. So somebody will know the answer to that question, and if they don't, I'll make one up. That last bit wasn't true. Well, I try not to. If you make my favourite contribution of the week, then you will win a Mystery Hour game. And you can have either the board game or the travel edition. The difference between the board game and the travel edition is worth pointing out, actually, because I think you should have both. The board game offers up a question, two possible answers to that question, one of which is correct, and then room for you to invent one. A bit like Call My Bluff, but not just meanings of words, entire answers to great mysteries. And you can invent one, and you score more points according to how many of the other players are persuaded that your made-up answer to the question is the correct answer. So you kind of need a bit of space for that, both physically and intellectually. The travel edition contains three answers to each question. It's all different questions as well, don't worry. And one of them is correct and two of them are made up. But the made up ones are both provided on the card, on the game card, the question card. So they're quite different games. One has got an element of Call My Bluff. And the other one is potentially funnier, unless, of course, the answers that you invent for yourself turn out to be right old rib ticklers. So that's the difference between the two. You can pick whichever one you prefer. Hard choice to make, actually. I suppose if you were just doing it on entirely materialistic terms, the original board game cost a little bit more than the travel edition, because the travel edition is, wait for it, in a tin. You can find out more about that at mysteryhour.co.uk. Such a big game. It's even got its own website. And you can find the full terms and conditions for the competition under which you win this for providing my favourite contribution of the week at lbc.co.uk. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. That's probably it, actually. We used to have some rules. I didn't used to like repetition, but I'm getting old. I can't even remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what we did on the show last week or a month ago. But I don't like motoring questions. We nearly veered in. Henry Riley nearly took us down a motoring road, didn't he, the other day when we were doing the Farage files, and he had a question about parking or something. But it turned out that reform was taking away free parking from disabled people. So it wasn't a motoring conversation at all. It was a discrimination or abusing disabled people story, possibly, inevitably, given who was responsible for it. So that's it, really. Be aware. Repetition, frowned upon, but not really. And motoring questions, despised. Absolutely detested. One of the first decisions I took, and it flew in the face of traditional radio phoning, because the management's always worked on the principle that lots of people are listening in the car, which is true. But it doesn't mean that everybody wants to hear a phone in about flipping parking tickets or smart motorways. The idea that because you are listening to the radio in the car means that you're going to be absolutely fascinated by the minutiae of transport policy. Very easy to get the phones to ring, of course, if I were to say, oh, cyclists, eh? Don't you hate them? The phones would ring off the hook. And you wouldn't get a single interesting phone call if you stayed on that topic for 12 hours. You could probably fill the switchboard for 12. Don't you hate cyclists, eh? 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 Yeah. And parking ticket, whoa. Second only, probably, to inviting people to ring in with why they don't like immigration or immigration policy. You won't speak to a single intelligent person in the course of the entire conversation, but my God, the queue will reach from here to Mars. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. Shall I stop now before I offend anybody else during the hour of the week that is supposed to be light-hearted and funny? Yes. Thank you, Keith. I don't take anything by text. Unless you've got an extremely good reason. So answers, questions, or something in between. During this hour of the show, we are confined exclusively to the phones. And that's it, I think. Gareth is in Bury. Gareth, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Gareth.
Right, why is it that hot water for a tap sounds different to cold water?
Does it?
Yeah, do you know, like, in the morning when you are having a wash, you turn your hot tap on...
Most mornings.
Away,
most mornings, Gareth, whether I need one or not.
Well, yeah. Same. Depends how late I've woken up.
How would you describe the difference in sound?
I don't know. You can just hear it. Like, you can just tell that the water is at a temperature that you can stick your head under it. I can't describe it.
Can you do it?
No, it just sounds... It sounds thicker.
Thicker?
I guess. Thicker.
But, I mean, could it just be the pressure? Could it be pressure? If a hotter water has a different pressure, so it would come out...
It's got to be something like that, about, like, the density or something.
But we need to know. It's no good sitting here speculating. We need an answer. And so we're going with thicker. It somehow sounds...
I'd say so. It's just got a different tone to it.
So if it was a mouth, the cheeks would be inflated. No?
Potentially. Maybe if it was a mouth, it would sound more like a rat.
A rat?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
What, like squeaky?
Well, mouses are squeaky, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it just sounds deeper than it. So it'd be a mouse.
Oh, mouse! I said mouth. T-H.
Oh, I thought you said mouth.
No, if it was a mouse, the cheeks would be inflated.
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you see, like, a rounder sounder?
Yeah.
Like a
more
my cheeks are inflated. It sounds full of temper. Like that, not a mouse.
Yeah,
well done, Keith. Hey, Keith worked that out. Everybody else is going, what the hell has happened here? Who's talking about this? Who's talking about that? That's why Keith gets paid the big bucks. All right, Gareth, you're on the board. Why does hot water sound differently from cold water? And if someone can actually do an impression of how different they sound, and it is persuasive, then you'll probably get a round of applause and you'll be in with a chance of winning a Mystery Hour game. Staying in the same neck of the woods, actually, from Bury to Wigan, from Gareth to Brian. Brian, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Brian. We're big in Lancashire today.
The northwest.
Yes, right. It is all over. Go on.
We're in Greater Manchester.
Right, Wigan is now. Yes, of course. Sorry. Carry on. Rugby league country. Right there. I'm safe there now.
Yeah, when you're coming back to Manchester, that's not the question.
No.
A glass vinegar bottle that you have on your kitchen table. The pointy one with the hexagon shape.
Yeah.
If that should get broken.
Yeah.
And you the supermarket to buy a brand new one.
Yeah.
If you open it, it's never had vinegar in it before. You get it off your favourite supermarket shelf.
What, an empty bottle to put vinegar in?
Yeah. Yes.
Really?
Yours is broken at home. One of the children has dropped it and broken it.
Yeah, I know, but I've never seen empty vinegar bottles for sale in the supermarket.
They have them in Waitrose, Jake.
I'm more of a Morrison's man myself, Brian, despite appearances.
Well, the supermarkets are available.
Do they really? I'm just checking with my colleagues. Keith, have you ever seen empty vinegar bottles for sale? So what, you buy a big, like, 3-litre plastic bottle, do you, and you top it up?
No, it's a glass bottle.
No, I know, but why would you want an empty glass bottle? Because you haven't got any vinegar. So you buy a big, big tub of vinegar and pour it into the glass bottle at home, do you?
You're sounding like Donald now, Jack.
I'm completely lost, and it's not a very good phone line, so I can't... I don't know whether we need to get him on a better phone line, because I want to interrogate this caller properly, like Jeremy Paxman. Why would you buy an empty vinegar bottle?
Because you haven't got one at home.
but you haven't got any vinegar.
You have got vinegar that you could refill the other bottle with, the smaller bottle with.
What do you refill it from?
The larger bottle with no pointy top.
Oh, you mean like the fish and chip vinegar bottle?
Yeah.
The fish and chip shop one with okay. Oh, well, aren't you fancy? Most people don't have one of them on their table at home.
Well, they sell them in the supermarket. Anyway.
So you go to the shop and you buy the kind of vinegar bottle that you'd ordinarily encounter in a restaurant or a chippy.
Yes, thank you for narrowing...
Well, I flip it out. All right. No wonder you thought I was daft. Go on. And what's the question then?
So you've got this brand new bottle off the shelf.
Yeah.
Before you purchase it, open it up.
Yeah.
And it smells of vinegar, but it's never had vinegar in it. Why is that?
It does not.
It does. It's a phenomenon.
How many times have you tested this theory?
Since I found out about it, a couple of times.
So you just have, like, I want you to be honest with me, Brian.
Always, James.
Have you ever sniffed a bottle that you didn't then buy?
Yet.
Yeah, all right. I believe you then.
Just to prove the point.
Wouldn't you? Could it be psychological? Could you just because that bottle would never, ever contain anything else. So psychologically, your brain is saying to your nostrils, vinegar, 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 vinegar. And then you smell the bottle and your nostrils say to your brain, vinegar, 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 vinegar. But there is actually no vinegar.
That is the answer to the question I would like to...
I think that's what it will be. I can't imagine that they recycle them without washing them properly, which is the only other alternative, Occam's razor. And now I've got two thoughts, Brian. The first is, why haven't we got a proper vinegar bottle in the house? I imagine Mrs. O'Brien probably, she's always clearing things up that I like to leave artistically placed around the kitchen. And then the second question is, how am I going to test this theory without sniffing bottles next time I'm in Morrison's, if indeed they sell them? Right, you're on the board, though. Why the vinegar? I mean, if there's anybody else in the known universe who has experienced this phenomenon, then they might be able to answer the question as to why an empty bottle designed to contain vinegar at some point in the future... Why did you smell the bottle in the first place, Brian?
Because someone told me about it, and you've actually done something that Donald hasn't done.
What's that?
You've had two thoughts in the same brain at the same time.
Actually, it was Keith in my ear. I'm not that clever. So, someone else told you that the vinegar bottles always smell of vinegar, so you had a little sniff of one, and lo and behold, it smelled of vinegar.
Yes.
And unless there is an untapped market for second-hand vinegar bottles, you have stumbled, as you said, across a phenomenon. Brian, lovely job. Can anyone answer that question? I think we've got an early contender for the board game, if nothing else. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd pay off my mortgage and my mum's mortgage.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. But you forget to pay off those mortgages.
Whoops.
Because you're on a cruise with lots of money.
Money cruise, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
If you're in the supermarket later and you see somebody sniffing empty vinegar bottles, then it's probably worth stopping for a chat because you've got quite a lot in common. You'll probably find out you might be simpatico. You might fall in love. I like that as being the icebreaker in future friendships and relationships, because you will know if you see someone in the supermarket sniffing vinegar bottles later, you'll know that you share an enthusiasm for this alleged radio show. So we've got questions about why hot water sounds different from cold water when it's coming out the tap, and why empty bottles designed to contain vinegar at some unspecified point in the future already smell of vinegar. If indeed they do. Ian is in Montboucher in France. Ian, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello.
My question, it's springtime, so it's a horticultural one.
Oh, marvellous.
And it's about daffodils.
Yes.
Now, when I drive around the countryside, I see daffodils on verges and on the edge of ditches, often miles and miles away from villages or houses, just in the middle of nowhere. Now, if I want more daffodils in my garden, I understand I have to go and buy bulbs in the autumn and plant them.
Yeah.
So they're obviously not spread by seed, they're spread by bulbs.
Yeah.
How do those daffodils get there? Who is going around the open countryside in the middle of nowhere planting bulbs of daffodils?
Are they, remind me, they're not perennial, that you need to plant them every year, daffodils, don't you? They don't come back.
Oh, well, I'm no expert. No, I think they do come back.
Do they come back every year?
Yeah, okay. Somebody at some point has
Of course they do. Of course they come back. Of course they come back every year. Sorry, I've gone bonkers. They've come out in Boston Manor Park, and they're looking absolutely beautiful. I was there yesterday for a game of tennis, and people are taking their photographs with... That's how desperate we are for a bit of joy in our lives at the moment, Ian. People are taking photographs with daffodils, not with, like, amazing blossoms, although there was a beautiful tree just blossoming as well. But, I do think the answer is going to be that somebody plants them.
But they're in the middle of nowhere. I mean,
I know, but that's, that's what communities... I mean, imagine if everybody who is currently sticking tatty flags on lampposts up and down the country was instead planting daffodils. That would be a beautiful thing, wouldn't it?
Well, of course it would. Of course it
would. So somebody is doing it. What you might describe the yang to the tatty flag brigade's yin. But I don't know. So I suppose we need to find someone. So you're talking about the countryside. No obvious inhabitations nearby. No obvious purpose to the verge that you're passing. It's not attached to a village hall or any... Somehow, somewhere, daffodils have sprouted through the loam to deliver a springtime burst of joy to Ian and me and others, and we want to know where that process began.
You've got it. You've got it.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done. 21 after 12 is the time. Terry is in Nottingham. Terry, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry
How are you?
Terry. Very well. Is that it? That was easy. Round of applause for me, please. I'm very well, Terry. How are you?
I don't believe you. That's not
exactly
answer.
Go on, then. What's next?
Yeah, I've often wondered what determines someone's sense of humour. Not the obviously like politics, but the one I can think of, excuse me, blatantly,
it's
is
right.
Why do I love Stuart Lee but hate Michael McIntyre? Or similarly, I mean, age is another thing.
Yeah.
When people watch sitcoms where people think, oh, I love George and Mildred.
Yeah.
And then people could say, oh, I love the in-betweeners. Not that topical, but...
I'm quite a... I'm a bit of a... equal opportunities. I find an awful lot of things funny that are contradictory. I find Michael McIntyre funny, not as funny as Stuart Lee.
Well, you're wrong there, then. I can pick you up on that one.
Well, he is funny, though. He does some funny stuff.
No, I beg to differ.
Well, you can. I'm just saying. I mean, Stuart's a genius, stone-cold genius, but there's no way Michael McIntyre would be Michael McIntyre if he wasn't objectively funny, even if you and I subjectively, or you in particular, subjectively don't find him funny. Do you want to know something amazing about Michael McIntyre?
He is considered funny by lots of people.
No, that's not it, but it is true. Michael McIntyre, shortly before he became, like, mega, mega famous, can you guess where he did some swing work?
What, as in swinging?
No.
Sex
porn? No, God, no. Careful. Tell the lawyers to relax. It's all right. I've got this. As in covering for the regulars. Somewhere in the, if we were to use the word showbiz very, very broadly, Michael McIntyre did a few shifts many years ago covering for the regulars on, for example, a broadcast platform. Can you guess where it was?
Do you mean like a warm-up man for an audience?
No, I mean like on air, but not with a permanent gig. Like a substitute teacher, but a presenter. So like when I go on holiday and they troll me by hiring Suella Braverman.
Well, some people may say that's a good thing. I necessarily wouldn't agree with them.
But can you guess where it was? It's becoming increasingly obvious, Terry, the more I labour this point.
Well then, try me again. I'll say that put my brain into action.
What radio station did Michael McIntyre do holiday cover on?
I can't think of any holiday...
LBC.
I don't know. My best guess, even though it's going to be totally wrong, he worked at Butlin's.
LBC. LBC!
Was that back in the good old days before you were a national broadcaster?
Yeah.
Well, there you go then.
What do you mean the good old days? You're in Nottingham.
Yeah, and what's wrong with Nottingham?
Nothing, but you wouldn't have been able to listen to us, so how can they be the good old days?
Well, have you heard of a thing called YouTube?
Give him a round of applause. I like the question. And that's a really good bit of LBC trivia that even people who work here don't know or believe when I tell them, but it's true. Did you know that? Even my own producer didn't know that, and I usually recycle my anecdotes at least 17 times a week. He didn't do my holiday cover. I was tapped up to do one of his TV shows a while ago, and I didn't make the final cut for it. And I had a great plan in that I was going to say to him during that little bit of banter at the beginning that and I was going to say, where did it all go wrong? Because he'd be there presenting a massive, shiny, prime-time Saturday night show as one of the biggest names in British showbiz. And I'd say, you used to do holiday cover on our radio station, didn't you, Michael? And then I'd say, where did it all go wrong? Boom, boom. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why they hired him, but he was, I don't even know whether he was any good or not. I didn't listen to it. And I don't know why I made the cut. I didn't make the cut for the final. I can't even remember what programme it was. But they're lost. Trisha is in Mason. Trisha, question or answer?
Hello, it's a question.
Carry on, Trisha.
And I've been wanting to ask you for weeks, so I'm so pleased I got through.
So am I.
So I've got a lovely little dog called Winnie Woo Woo, and in the mornings and evenings, we're sitting in the park together on the bench, and when I listen to the bird song, say robins and blackbirds, which are truly beautiful,
yeah.
I want to know, has that bird song changed over the centuries, or have they always sang the same way since day one?
I don't know how we'd know.
I know, it's a lovely, lovely question. It's lovely sitting in the park listening to them.
Do you go dusking?
Yes.
Do you know what that is?
At dusk, bat watching.
Yeah, so you're sitting there at dusk watching the evening descend. I was reading about it this week. It's been very good for your mental health.
Done it for years.
You're ahead of the curve. It's in the papers this week.
You have to bend down because they fly so low you think they're going to catch you on the head.
I don't mean the bats necessarily. I just mean dusk in general. But bats are obviously prone to appear at dusk.
Out at dusk, yeah.
You know, were you listening earlier when I said mouth and Gareth thought no. I said mouse?
No.
It was only 5 minutes ago.
Well, I've literally finished for lunchtime at work, got in the car, put my phone on, hands-free.
Yeah.
Because I've got through straight away and I've wanted to ask this question for weeks. So
I don't know if I'm going to let... that's reasonable. I'll allow that. So, anyway, earlier in Mystery Hour, I said to Gareth something mouth, as in mouth, what you talk out of, and he thought I said mouse, Tricia, as in squeak, squeak. And it was hilarious what ensued. You had to be there. But I said to Mrs. O'Brien this morning, this is actually true, although it's quite a coincidence, I said, I'd like to start dusking.
And she thought you said basking?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't play anything. She looked at me as if... And she just... She had that curious mixture of love and befuddlement with which she often looks at me, Tricia. I'm not going to lie to you.
Why do you want to start dusking?
I just think it would be nice to... I mean, I'm not going to get up in time to watch sunrise, so I'm going to start watching sunsets. Just to be outside at dusk, it puts you in tune with the... With the, you know, the seasons and the what's the clock? There's not the cycladic clock. The clock inside you, the circadian rhythms, Tricia.
So in the evening, Winnie Woo and me are sat on that bench listening to the evening song.
Yeah.
Swellers.
And it's keeping you. It's why you're so chirpy, isn't it? It's why you're so chipper.
Yeah. Because you're doing the
dusking. Have you ever been busking? Have you ever tried busking?
No. But if I did, I'd have to put strings and stuff on so I could be a one-woman band and walk along and hope to stay at place. So, I really hope someone's got the answer to this question.
So do I. Is it Minnie Woo or Minnie Woo Woo?
It's Winnie Woo Woo.
Winnie Woo Woo. So is Woo, is it hyphenated or is Woo Woo like a surname?
I've never thought of it like that. But when she's in my really good books, I call her Winnie Woo Woo Baby Boo Boo.
Oh. That's nice.
If my son's listening.
It's just disowned you, Tricia. Have a lovely day. Don't waste the rest of your lunch hour, whatever you do. It's coming up to 7:30. So I've got some phone lines free, unsurprisingly, given that no one's got the first idea what's going on. If you've got a question that needs an answer, we need more questions, all right? 0345 6060973 is the number you need. We got a bit overrun by vinegar-related people ringing in. So if you tried to get through 15 minutes ago and failed, have another go now. We think we've got rid of the vinegar. And, of course, we still need answers to the questions about hot water, daffodils, comedy, birdsong, and... are we all right on the vinegar? Anyway, questions first and then answers, all right? Matt Hewitt's here with your headlines.
The Defence Secretary John Healey is in Cyprus to try to reassure islanders that the UK can protect them. A drone hit a hangar at an RAF base there earlier this week, but a British warship is not expected to arrive in the region for several more days. Up to £40,000 will be offered to some families to leave the UK as part of changes to the asylum system being proposed by the Home Secretary. Accommodation and financial support will be removed from people seeking asylum who are caught working illegally under a new conditional offer of support. And the husband of a Scottish Labour MP and two other men have been released on bail after being questioned on suspicion of spying for China. Joni Reid says she has no reason to think David Taylor has broken any law. LBC weather. Cold with rain in parts of Scotland, Northern Ireland, West Wales and the west of England. Elsewhere, a warm, mostly sunny day. Highs between 5 and 17 Celsius.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text
text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12.32 is the time. We did it entirely by accident. Thank you to Stuzzy for pointing this out. It's World Book Day. What better day for my Joseph Hiller anecdote that you can, if you missed it, you can listen back by rewinding live. What time did I tell my Joseph Hiller anecdote? Do we, anyway, it's a very good story for World Book Day. 12.33 is the time. It needed a bit of what? Needed a bit of context, did it? Needed a bit of a correction. So when you listen back to it, I got confused. And I said it that Catch 22 was set in Vietnam, when of course it wasn't. It was set in World War II. So don't hold that against me while you're enjoying my Joseph Hiller anecdote. Can I tell my Tim Roth anecdote, or would that be too show-offy? What? No, I know I am what I am, but I don't know. Would it? Well, it's a great anecdote, right? Would it make me say, no, I'll sound, no, I'm too shy. I'm not doing it. You've spoilt it for me now. I'm not doing it. 12.33 is the time. Richard is in Bedford. Richard, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Richard.
Yes, strawberries. When I was younger, and I'm sure you can recall this, when you ate
How can I recall when you were younger? I've only just met you.
I'm a similar age, well, a little bit younger than yourself. But,
go on.
When you used to pick strawberries or buy strawberries in the shop,
yeah,
the stem or the core would just pull straight out.
He's right.
Whereas now, you have to cut them out. So I don't know why a strawberry has evolved. And
I bought a thing. I bought a thing from Lakeland, actually.
Okay.
To take the core out. Like a little claw.
Well, recently?
Yeah, about 2 years ago. I've lost it. I need to buy another one. So it's like, you push it in, right, and the claw opens, and then you put it into your strawberry and take your thumb off the button and it closes, and then you pull it out and it takes the husk. Is it a husk or a hull? A hull,
I
think.
No idea,
takes the hull out. Clean as a whistle, mate.
Excellent.
Lovely bit of kit. Really nice. It's the kind of thing I was talking about earlier that I buy and then it mysteriously disappears, and it turns out Mrs. O'Brien's put it in the cellar because she doesn't think it's very useful. So I must check the cellar when I get home. I recognise what you describe. And I wonder whether our memory is playing tricks on us. Because you still occasionally find a strawberry that de-hulls satisfyingly, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's quite rare, though.
Rare, but we only remember the good ones. Our memory might have played tricks on us. Like our nose is playing tricks on us when we go sniffing empty vinegar bottles in Waitrose.
Maybe they were just fresher when we were hand-picking them.
Oh, that might be it as well. Because we did used to hand-pick them a lot, didn't we?
Yeah.
You'd always have a day out. God. Oh, right, you're on. Why is it now that our strawberries do not easily give up their hulls? Whereas when we were children, we remember them popping out without any pressure, barely being applied at all, and popping out neatly and pluggishly. I like that, Richard. Take care. Sam's in Great Leas, Chelmsford. Sam, question or answer?
It's question, please, James.
Carry on, Sam.
Firstly, real pleasure to speak to you.
We're going to have to sort your phone line out. It's a real pleasure to speak to you as well, but it'll be even more of a pleasure if I can completely make out what you're saying, so that will be imminent. Robert is in Redruth in Cornwall. Robert, question or answer?
Oh, it's an answer, James.
Carry on, Robert.
It's the sound that comes out of the taps and faucets when you're running hot water, and it goes from cold to hot.
Oh, marvellous. Go on.
As you would expect, it's physics.
Yes.
The water forcing through a pipe of any sort and through an orifice will create vibrations. That's why you can hear any noise at all coming through. You've also got the rushing water, of course, which you'll hear as it hits the basin, what have you. But the principal factor is the pipe itself. And what happens as temperature changes, the stiffness of that material changes. So you can imagine a pipe with the water pushing through it. That's subject to friction, and it will cause vibrations as a result of that friction. It's just like pushing your finger up a piece of glass, you know? And as the temperature changes, the stiffness of that material changes.
So the friction changes as well?
Exactly. The resonance of that material changes, and you'll hear different frequencies. So the pressure, out of it. It's very, very simple.
So the pressure might be the same, but the temperature is changing the frequency.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, that's a lovely answer. Qualifications?
Nearly 40 years as an instrument engineer.
Wow. musical instruments or all sorts of instruments?
These are measurement instruments.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know. Okay.
So not like a flute, not like a flute. You're not a flute engineer.
Well, I suppose it does transfer over a bit.
Okay, I'm sure it does. That's a beautiful answer. Round of applause for Robert. Lovely stuff. Thank you. Back to Sam in Great Leeds. Sam, question or answer?
Hello, can you hear me? Am I back?
Oh, that's brilliant. Carry on.
Sorry. James, real pleasure to speak to you firstly.
Is it? Because you've already said it, so it's secondly.
Secondly, real pleasure to speak to you. my question is, how do they decide, or who decides, where they put post boxes? I live in Great Leeds, which is between Chelmsford and Braintree. It's a small village of just under 3,000 people, and there is a main road that goes through the village, and there are 4 post boxes on it, which seems excessive given the population, and that they're all within easy walking distance of like any house there.
And of each other.
I don't really
use post boxes much anymore, do we? Unless we're sending birthday cards or something like that. But I've got no idea. I mean, Great Leeds might be a weird anomaly across the entire nation, because I don't know. And also,
we had a post box explosion at some point in a decade where they doubled the post box quantity in the village.
What we need in Great Leeds is more post boxes. More post boxes. Going back as well, I bet they're all quite old, aren't they? None of them have appeared in your recent memory or even perhaps in your lifetime.
No, I only lived there 5 years, but no, certainly there's been no installations. One of them got replaced, no new ones.
That's probably
big news.
Quite an exciting day in Great Leeds, that was.
Yeah.
I like this. So to be clear, we're not asking why there are so many post boxes in Great Leeds. If anybody knows that, they're probably going to win a board game. But we want to know who decides.
I drive around a lot for work, and I just notice, and they're always in like random places.
Places. Yeah, I like that. I can't believe we've never done that before. At which point, I'll get 40 texts saying you have, you forgetful wombat.
Well, I've listened to a lot of the podcasts. I've gone back a few years. I'm in, 2015 on the podcast.
Wow, that is a long way. There you go, then. And actually, it's a timely reminder for people that there is a massive archive of Mystery Hour podcasts, and it's probably the most timeless thing we've ever done. Nothing has changed, has it, from 2005 to now? And there's hundreds of them, Sam. Lovely stuff. Great question. How do they decide where to put post boxes? 0345 6060973 is the number you need. It's 12:41. So we've still got post boxes, strawberries, birdsong comedy, daffodils, and vinegar. We've done hot water. Might start needing some answers soon. Ollie's in Haywards Heath. Ollie, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Ollie.
So daffodils, planted 95% of the time, they do sort of propagate from seeds, but very rarely. Planted also by squirrels, because if you live in the countryside, they do nicky bulbs quite often.
Yeah.
But right the way far back as the Romans, so they brought them over from the Iberian Peninsula. They thought they had like healing properties, I think, but I think modern medicine would say not. They're quite toxic.
Sure.
And then they started planting them when they lost sort of other soldiers, comrades.
Well, like a grave marker.
Like a grave marker, yeah.
Gosh.
So, for sort of a long, 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 long time. So it is crazy how many of them
How long do they last for?
They can keep going and going. They go sun blind eventually. So if you see them pointing down rather than up,
that means they've been in there for a good while.
But there won't be daffodils now that were there.
Not the same bulb, no. But they call them a daughter bulb, so it would be sort of a relation of the one that was planted by Roman, potentially, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, this is a beautiful
The Victorians
answer.
Used to use them to mark things like wells, stuff like that as well, so markers for an old time.
I got a punishment at boarding school once, and it was gardening, which was a terrible thing to use as a punishment, but it was a weird school. They also made church. Going to church was a punishment as well, going to matins at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I tried to spell out some very rude words about my housemaster in daffodils when I was planting them.
Can you say what words?
I can't, no. Not on the radio. Not without Ofcom having a fit of the vapours. And by the time they flowered, sadly, I'd actually been expelled from that school. But unfortunately, when they came up, a couple of letters hadn't quite worked. So it kind of said, "Uck off, Elix," which wasn't necessarily what I originally planned. Qualifications?
In gardener, but I was walking through a field local to me the other day and saw a patch of sort of non-common daffodils and thought, what on earth are they doing there? And went down a bit of a rabbit
hole. Beautiful, beautiful answer, and I love that. Have you ever grown sprouts?
I have, actually, yeah.
Any
mixed successes.
Well, any success at all?
Yeah, actually, that's without going on.
I
grew some for Christmas, and my father-in-law promptly bought some 12p ones from Tesco's and cooked those instead.
Are you serious?
So they're still in the freezer, yeah. It's quite contention, actually.
That's quite rude.
Mm-hmm. I thought so.
If you don't mind me asking, how big are your sprouts?
They are marble-sized. They're not impressive in any way, shape, or form.
No, I grew them successfully, and I, to be fair, now that I have a mental image of your sprouts, I'm siding with your father-in-law on this, because I grew mine for Christmas as well, but there's no way I was going to serve them up.
I was hoping
you'd be able to tell me. I think we probably should have taken the big leaves off sooner.
Something like that, yeah.
Someone will know. I might put it on Mystery Hour next week, but there's no room for it this week. Has Ollie had his round of applause? Well, here it is. Oh, I love that. Great work. Ian in asking the question, Ollie in answering it. Daffodils, 12:44 is the time. Squeeze it. No, we won't. We'll do it after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister sticks
AO
to
members
his guns
get 10%
over.
Off hundreds of laundry appliances in AO's Big Spin event. Save a load on brands like Hotpoint, Beko and Hoover. Membership also unlocks unlimited free delivery and free recycling of your old appliance. All from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Join now and start saving at AO.com. Hey, oh, let's go. Verify at AO.com/trust. Membership charged annually at £39.99.
How big's the job? Compact and nimble? That's the Vauxhall combo. A bit of everything? Meet the award-winning Vivaro. Or is it a load-it-all job? That's Movano. Whatever the job, there's a Vauxhall van for it. Right now, during the Vauxhall Pro Days van event, until the 16th of March, you can save £750 off any new Vauxhall van, electric or diesel, on top of all other offers. Search Vauxhall van range. Business users only, 18 plus, £750 excluding VAT. T's and C's apply. Search Vauxhall van range.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:47 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. If I was giving board games away for texts, which I'm not, Steve would be the runaway winner. I don't know how much attention you were paying during the last break, but Steve's been in such a say, blimey, even the adverts interrupt each other on James's show, which, well, it prompted slightly inappropriate levels of laughter from my own colleagues. Glenn's in Portsmouth. Glenn, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Glenn.
What I'd like to know is, every time we fire a rocket from the Earth into space that becomes a satellite or whatever going round,
right,
I've got to imagine they all go in the same direction.
Yeah.
But who dictates where it fits in, as it were, to where it's going round? If not, they'd all be bashing into each other, wouldn't they? I know it sounds a silly question, but...
Well, I don't think it is a silly question. I think you may have answered it, actually. You mean orbit, when something is in orbit?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, I don't think there's enough in orbit for it to be a very big problem. I don't think it needs proper regulation. But they do occasionally. There's quite a lot of jetsum or flotsam in, detritus knocking around in space.
That's what I'm thinking.
Which is caused by things banging into each other and satellites coming out of commission and bits falling off. And once it's in orbit, of course, I think it stays in orbit forever, doesn't it? It doesn't need any propulsion or any engine. But so, no, I don't think there is any mechanism by which they ensure that things in orbit don't bash into each other. I think it's just it's largely just luck and physics, the fact that there's so much room up there and so little material in orbit.
Okay, James, that's lovely.
I don't know if I should accept that, because I could be completely wrong.
Well, that's someone like that.
Someone, but I'm going to leave it on the board, Glenn. It's a lovely question. Okay, I think I've answered it, but I'm not confident enough to take any applause for it.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Stay safe. It is 12:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We need answers. We need answers. It's nearly 10:02. 03456060973. We've done the daffodils and we've done the hot water. We ain't done the vinegar, the comedy, the birdsong, the strawberries, the post boxes and the satellites. 03456060973. Gabby's in Guildford. Gabby, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Gabby.
There's about to be an answer for the birdsong. This one's for Tricia. I learnt this from David Byrne's book, the Talking Heads frontman.
Really?
How Music Works. Yeah.
Good Lord, we're on the road to nowhere.
That's the one. A shotgun shack. So basically, specifically about whether the birdsong has changed in the last, 100 years or so, generally speaking, it will have done. So in San Francisco, birds were found to have raised the pitch of their songs over the last 40 years so that they could be heard over the traffic.
It's because they need to hear each other, of course. It's not just for our benefit, bird song, is it? It's mostly for bird benefit.
Yeah, and the cars were sort of occupying the same frequency, and they went, all right, well, we'll go higher so we can hear each other.
That's amazing. Why was David Byrne writing about it?
It's such a great book. It's great for musicians and non-musicians, because obviously it talks a bit about music, but it kind of just goes into sort of sound in the world as well.
He's a cool dude. He is a cool dude, isn't he, David?
So cool.
We should get him on the podcast. Actually, that would be good. Get him on Full Disclosure. Hey, guess who I had on Full Disclosure this week, Gabby?
Who?
Billy Idol.
No way!
Way! How cool is that? He's absolute. Right. He's everything you'd hope for in a 70-year-old. I know, it makes me feel ancient. And Billy Idol is 70. A 70-year-old rock star. He is absolutely everything you'd hope for. There's a brilliant new documentary about him about to drop on Sky Arts. But we should put. Yeah, I love that. Round of applause for Gabby. Great qualifications as well. Read a book by David Byrne. And that is, of course, an answer for Tricia. It's 12:51. Andy is in Amersham. Andy, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Andy.
It's about satellite orbits.
Blimey, that was quick.
Well, I was sitting here listening to you, as I always do on a Thursday. Actually doing documents for an organisation called the International Telecommunications Union, ITU.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the United Nations, well, it's an agency of the United Nations, and the radio regulations, which I'm not wholly across, but I sometimes go to their meetings, is the binding international treaty governing use of satellite orbits and radio frequencies. And the frequencies they use.
Oh, wow.
So
when you launch it, it knows where it's going to go?
You have to have permission, and you have to have an orbit. As you said, it's getting pretty crowded up there, especially with Mr. Musk's thousands of satellites in low orbit.
Well, I mean, Glenn asked a brilliant question, and there was me dismissing it out of hand with a really...
You get everybody in the room, and sometimes it gets pretty heated.
Because we want to go there, and there's no room here, and how dare you, and blah, blah, etc.
Well, it's also, if it's going over our territory, we need control.
Of course, yeah, there's all sorts. So are you an enthusiastic amateur, Andy?
No, I'm ex-BBC, and I go to the ITU as part of the group that does program production, you know, all the standards around HDR. In fact, we got the Emmy for HDR, and High Dynamic Range TV, and the standards. So it covers a wide area. It owns the internet as well in the other sector.
Does it really? And so yeah, the documentation that you're working on while you're listening to Mystery Hour, is that specific to orbiting...
No, it's specific to television standards for my next meeting, which starts next Monday week.
So. Okay, so no, because I was going to give you a Ray Liotta. You could have lied. I'm glad that you didn't.
No, they can't do that.
Exactly, because it would cheapen the whole honour, wouldn't it? It'd be like the FIFA Peace Prize. It'd be like the FIFA Peace Prize if we started dishing it out willy-nilly to all sorts of undeserving characters. But, Andy, that's a beautiful answer. I really thank you very much. No, thank you very much. And sorry to Glenn as well for not recognising the quality of the question. Also, the stupidity of my own answer. I'm sorry for everything. You can tell I'm a Catholic. Nick's in Bury St Edmunds. Nick, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Right, let's do it.
Vinegar bottles.
Go on.
So, at the end of the manufacturing process, these bottles would have been sterilised.
Yeah.
And they would have been sterilised using a rather cheap sterilising agent, such as peracetic acid. And can you guess what peracetic acid smells like?
I do. I know what acetic acid smells like.
It's a very similar substance.
So it smells like vinegar.
Yep.
Shut up. Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been... I used to work for a brewery. We used a lot of peracetic acid, and I know very well what it smells like. It smells like vinegar.
So it was always kids at school who'd say things like, could I have some acetic acid and some sodium chloride on my chips, please, miss?
Don't put it on your chips.
No, not the paracetic, but the acetic's fine.
Yeah.
And that is the answer. It smells of vinegar because it's been sterilised in a substance that smells very like vinegar.
That's correct.
I mean, flipping out, Brian was on the right track all along.
You were.
Nothing psychological about it? Nothing?
No, sterilising agent.
Qualifications, I know you told us, but tell us again.
Yeah, you used to work for a brewery. We used to sterilise all our bottles, vessels and casks using peracetic acid.
That's incredible. Was the brewery in Bury St Edmunds?
It was.
So is it Green Kick? Is it Green Kick?
No, it's a very small brewery called Brewshed.
Lovely, 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 lovely. Round of applause for Nick. I'm just going to have a quick word with the producer. People are complaining about the headphones being so loud, so you should be able to hear her. How did you think you pronounced it?
Like acetic.
Oh, acetic. No, it's definitely acetic. Well, I say that. I've always said acetic. So, hey, we've learned something. We always learn something on Mystery Earth. A great word from Nick. Sophie's in Bridgewater. Sophie, question or answer?
Answer, please. Can I do the postbox one?
Yeah, of course you can.
Sorry, I'm a bit nervous.
Why?
Everybody says they're nervous, but I genuinely am really nervous.
It's only me. It's only me. It's
I
Mystery
know,
Hour.
I listen to you every day.
Yeah, but Mystery Hour is the easiest thing to phone in the history of phoning. Well, you're doing brilliantly well already, Sophie. I can see this being the beginning of a beautiful friendship. What's your answer to the question?
So the postbox is, depending on, I don't know how big the location is, but if there's, say, one postbox at the beginning of the village and then one postbox right at the end of the village and maybe one in the middle...
Yeah.
I'm not explaining myself.
You are.
Over.
No, you are.
are you sure? If a property became a post office, they would have to have a postbox attached as well.
Right.
So if the post office turned up near, but, like, not too near to one of the other ones, then they'd end up having four postboxes.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So we need to know the history of Lees, Great Lees, or whatever it was called, to know for sure why they've got four. Do we know what the general rule is for where a postbox goes?
So now, I don't know back along because I'm not that old. But now they won't replace the postbox if there's one more than half a mile away.
Okay, so they're probably right on the money in the village that the questioner mentioned. So a postbox has to be within half a mile
Of a property.
Of a house. So every house should have a postbox within half a mile of it.
Yep. So my thought is there's probably two on the outskirts, one in the middle, and then the property became a post office.
It's incredible.
Therefore, they had one turn up. And they generally don't replace post boxes now either.
Because we don't use them. Qualifications?
Yep. I was a postie for 10 years, and a part of my job was reporting the maintenance of post boxes when they got broken.
Gosh. Why did you stop?
that's a story for another day.
Ooh, a round of applause for Sophie. 12:57 is the time. Neil's in pool. Neil, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, Neil.
Strawberries.
Yes.
It's about ripeness and seasonality.
Is it? Is it? Is it?
Yes.
Right.
If you go into supermarkets now, all the strawberries, they've got white tops.
I can't get near to the strawberries because of all the people sniffing vinegar bottles.
Is that acetic or acetic? yeah, they're all white. They've got no real strawberry flavour. They're forced. Summertime, you go to pick your own, they'll have a little red bulge. They'll be coloured all the way through, and the hull will just pop out nice and easy.
So we don't do it, really. We don't pick our own anymore. Or at least, I don't. I mean, I can't remember the last time I'd pick. So if I went to some of the lovely fields around Chaddesley Corbett, and I took a different route, because I don't want to go through Bromsgrove and look at all those tatty flags flying everywhere, and I got to one of the lovely pick-your-own farms on the outskirts of Chaddesley Corbett, like I did as a child, then yeah. I would, but not just me, but Richard as well, we could recreate our childhood memories of little holes that pluck and pop out of the middle of the strawberry without any pressure being exerted whatsoever, and you pop the whole thing into your little mouth and you munch away.
Or even most of the ones in the supermarket in the summertime.
Are you sure about
season,
that?
We'll
Are you sure about
this.
That?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's because we live in a world of everything's available all year round.
We do. We do. I love that. Qualifications?
27 years a chef.
Well, that'll do. Have you ever grown your own sprouts?
I haven't grown my own sprouts.
Well, that'll have to wait till next week. Round of applause for Neil, please.
Thank you very much.
What a lovely mystery how that was. I'm going to make a controversial decision here, because it's been some very funny, borderline surreal, and you know that's not a word I use casually, calls to the programme today, and I'm actually going to give the prize to Ollie, who answered the daffodils question, because Brian was funnier, Terry was funnier, Andy was fascinating, wasn't he? And Glenn's question was great. Everyone was brilliant. I sound like a teacher in a politically correct school. Everyone gets a medal this week. You're all winners. But Andy just has given me stuff that I, Ollie, sorry, has given me stuff that I will remember. It was just lovely. Daffodils and Romans, for me, will always be together in my mind. If you missed any of today's show, you can, well done. You can listen back. You know how. Podcasts available. Great. A really powerful one coming tomorrow, I have to tell you. And then, of course, later, as I've let on already this show, Billy Idol popping up. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogg.
Thank you for going a tiny bit late, because it means I'm not breaking an embargo when I tell you that the Prime Minister is about to speak. Yeah, you did. The Prime Minister is due to speak sometime in the next hour or so, so we'll bring that to you live about the situation in Iran and the UK's involvement. There's a big question about our defence capabilities, whether we can get that carrier over to the Persian Gulf ASAP. There's also the question of getting people home. An update on that, perhaps, is what we might hear from the Prime Minister. I want to know, to start, though, would it matter to you if Keir Starmer originally wanted to say yes to President Trump on the Iran war, but was essentially outvoted, overruled even, by members of his cabinet? The Defence Secretary, John Healey, is in Cyprus. The LBC is there, too. Your calls in a moment.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Defence Secretary John Healey is in Cyprus to try to reassure islanders that the UK can protect them. A drone hit a hangar at an RAF base there earlier this week, but a British warship is not expected to arrive in the region for several more days. The Treaty of Guarantee, which was signed more than 60 years ago, agreed Britain would take responsibility for the security of the island. LBC's deputy political editor, Aggie Chambray, is in Cyprus and says a meeting Mr Healey held with local officials seems to have gone well.
I'm told that that was a warm meeting, that the Greek defence minister called him a friend. He's also met some local community leaders, and people, I'm told, are feeling more confident and more safe after those meetings and because of the defences, the Ministry of Defence says.
The government says a delayed charter rescue flight bringing Britons home from the Middle East will depart Oman imminently. Israel and Iran have traded missile attacks on the sixth morning of the war. The number of Iranians killed stands at just over 1,200, according to a news agency linked to Iran's Revolutionary Guards. The Israeli army has issued a mass evacuation warning for the suburbs of Beirut in Lebanon. A small number of failed asylum seekers will be offered £10,000 per person, up to £40,000 per family, to leave Britain. The trial's been announced by the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, who told our political editor, Natasha Clark, if it works, the taxpayer will save overall.
These are people who have failed in all of their asylum claims in this country. People who have had multiple appeals and have exhausted all of their appeal rights and therefore have no right to be in this country. And again, I think people would expect us to be doing everything we can to encourage those people to leave.
Accommodation and financial assistance will be removed from people seeking asylum who are caught working illegally. Three men arrested on suspicion of spying for China have been bailed. One of them, David Taylor, is the husband of Labour MP Joni Reid. Properties were searched in East Kilbride, London and Cardiff. A watchdog's planning to fine South East Water £22 million for repeated supply failures. Ofwat found nearly 300,000 customers were affected by outages between 2020 and 2023. South East Water tried to block the regulator from publishing its plan to impose the fine. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 4 points at 10,572. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, cold with rain in parts of Scotland, Northern Ireland, West Wales and the west of England. Elsewhere, a warm, mostly sunny day, highs between 5 and 17 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Switching to Virgin Media's lightning-fast broadband is easy. We'll handle everything for you. That's smooth broadband and smooth switching. Smooth like a walrus on a speedboat powering through open-fjord waters. Yeah, that's smooth. Visit virginmedia.com. New customers only. Virgin Fibre areas. Restrictions and credit checks apply. No setup fee. Online only. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. You'll probably, hopefully, understand if the focus is still very much on Iran and all that is flowing from it, because, of course, events aren't just happening in Iran. The whole of the Middle East really seems to be affected by this, and there are plenty of British people still hoping to get home this week. We're expecting a statement and a press conference from the Prime Minister in the next hour or so. From number 10, we'll go live to that. Our own political editor, Natasha Clark, has headed down there. So we'll see what he has to say then. What we know from the sort of status quo at the moment is that there is a huge amount of destruction in Tehran, the Iranian capital, after 6 days of US-Israeli strikes. In Israel, the military reports new attacks from Iran as well, both on Israel and the United Arab Emirates. I'm joined in the studio by John Sopel, co-host of Global's podcast, the news agents, former North America editor of the BBC, as I'm sure you know as well. And John, you know from experience that when events such as this are happening, there is the story that we see and know, and there is the story that we don't yet see and know. And there have been some fascinating revelations this morning from the journalist Tim Shipman of The Spectator about that decision-making process in the cabinet. Talk us through it.
Well, first of all, it should be said that Tim Shipman has been the great chronicler
of cabinet government in this country for the past decade and has impeccable sources. So
his books on Brexit, for example. Yeah.
Exactly. And the psychodrama that went on within the Conservative Party and tore the Conservative Party apart was something that he made his own. Mm. So when Tim Shipman writes it, you don't go, oh, that's all nonsense, anonymous
guesswork,
sources,
blah, blah, blah.
No, Tim Shipman is a proper journalist who's got very good sourcing. And he says that there was a split within the cabinet, essentially over whether there should be any permission given for the use of Diego Garcia in the Chagos Islands. And that the rebellion, such as it was led by Ed Miliband, the energy secretary, and supported by Rachel Reeves, the chancellor, and as well as Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper. And they acted as a sort of phalanx against Keir Starmer, whereas Keir Starmer had wanted to say, in a defensive capacity, i.e. if you're going after missile launchers, then fine, you can use it. But if you're going after people and infrastructure, you can't, which is where we are now, then it suggests that foreign policy is being dictated by the energy secretary, if this story is right. Mm. And the Spectator column has apparently in this meeting of the National Security Council, Ed Miliband was pacifist and petulant. So, I mean, it's kind of, that was the description given, and legalistic. And so I think that this is a serious question about what is going on in government and the legal advice. And of course, this is the scars of Iraq from 2003. And then when Ed Miliband became leader of the opposition, and there were going to be strikes on Syria over their use of...
He upended those, didn't he?
And he voted against Cameron's proposal. That then scuppered Obama. And there was fury in America over Ed Miliband's stance in particular, that he hadn't backed the use of force when chemical weapons had been used.
That moment when David Cameron, in that vote, or at the end of that vote, said, Parliament has spoken. Remember that?
Oh. Yeah, I do. And I think that Ed Miliband has played... So, you know, Ed Miliband in the cabinet is sort of, you know, he's the most experienced because of, you know, his position in the, you know, when Blair was Prime Minister and then Gordon Brown, and so he's, and has been leader of the opposition. So, you know, he throws his weight around.
He's stubborn, isn't he? I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say,
yeah,
on energy policy, he is not taking any lessons from anybody on his green agenda.
Look, from political opponents, I've heard it said that Ed Miliband is far and away